see who's hovering over me?
Doesn't that make you nervous?
Yeah. Steve Cochran.
Oh, is that who that was?
That was Steve Cochran.
I'd like to meet him someday.
Mornings over on WGN Radio, our sister station, was just standing right over me, making me very nervous.
You know what's so bad about that? By the way, I'm Wendy Snyder. That's
Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning. When someone wants some information and you say, hey, let me call it up on my computer, and
right,
they're standing behind you, all of a sudden I can't type. I hit every wrong button.
Why would that be?
It just makes me nervous with someone hovering. So I think Cochran should just stand behind you the whole show.
That would be nerve-wracking. That would rack my nerves. I don't think I want that. I'll confess something. I didn't see a minute of last night's convention, Republican convention, and I was all geared up to, but the evening just took some weird twists and turns, and I didn't get to see any of it. I'll catch up to it, but I don't know if you got to see any of it either. Did I miss anything major?
I did not watch it. I heard a lot of audio. I looked at a lot of audio, and Donnie Jr. did a good job.
Always does. Solid. Solid performer.
I wish he was running. He and Ivanka.
It's weird that every one of his kids, except for the baby, are going to speak.
You mean Barron?
Barron Trump. Pressure, by the way.
Right there, yeah.
You're putting a little bit of pressure on your kid when you name him Barron Trump. He will not be speaking, although he's the one I think that would make the most sense to me.
How old is he?
Of all the Trump kids. He's a toddler. But I would like to see him come up and give his ideas for what direction we're headed in. With a little weird orange hair thing going on top. I would love that.
I also saw Jimmy Fallon had some orange hair doing some sketches.
It's a color you rarely see you see it in the produce aisle, but you don't see it much in nature, that particular brand of orange. Like, I don't know any people. You know what it reminds me of? This is such a weird thing. When I was a kid, one of our first days of school, I didn't go to kindergarten because I'm ambidextrous. I went straight to first grade. And we had a coloring assignment, and I wasn't a particularly good colorer in first grade. I couldn't stay in the lines, and my color selection was poor. And I remember
color outside the lines. That's what you should do your whole life.
Well, I ended up doing that. But I remember coloring. There was a picture of a family, a man, a woman, and a child, and I colored the man with orange hair. And I remember my teacher saying, people don't have orange hair. And I would love to find her and say, look, it took a while, but you're wrong. People do have orange hair. Bozo and Donald Trump.
And my son Michael, when he was born, it was pretty orange.
Did he have orange hair?
It was orange. It was orange.
Really? Were you startled? I would have been scared.
I had joked, if I get a redhead, I'm returning him. I always said that to my mom just to bug her because she loved redheads.
Yeah.
So when Michael was born, Jim looked at the baby and said, thank you, Elaine, because he was orange. And it's gotten darker, but he didn't have a lot of hair then, so
yeah,
a thin type of thing is orange.
Were you sure? Like, my first inclination, because you don't have red hair and Jim doesn't, and to my knowledge, no one in either of your families do they? Does anyone anywhere have orange or red hair?
Yes, my grandmother had three redheaded sisters.
Oh,
she was
okay.
Italian. And
how about that?
And had three redheaded sisters, but not that red, not orange.
I would think someone at the hospital pulled a switcheroo on me.
No,
I'd be positive.
He's our baby.
Now it's obvious, but as a small baby, because isn't that an episode of almost every sitcom that's ever happened, is that the baby's either been switched or the parents think the baby's been switched?
Yeah. No, I knew he was mine. I knew it.
No doubt about
it. I knew it. But do you recall, and I don't know, since my kids are younger than yours, speaking of baby orange-haired Michael, there was the annoying orange cartoon. Do you remember that?
I don't remember.
I will find you a picture.
What is
Kevin,
that?
Do you remember that? It was like on Adult Swim or something, Cartoon Network. It was was it annoying orange? And it was just an orange with a face on it. And I think that,
really?
You know, they should be in cahoots with Donald Trump. They should hook up.
Right. That should sponsor.
I'll find
if it's
it
still
for
in
you.
Existence, they should sponsor him.
It was an orange with a face on it that was, oddly enough, annoying.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry I missed that. All right, there's a lot on today's show. At some point, we don't have to do it now, but at some point I want to talk about Gary Marshall, who died yesterday. And I hope you remember. I know sometimes you don't always remember, but I hope you remember we had him on the show with us years ago at Q101.
I do remember that, because when I heard of his passing, I said to Jim, I think we spoke to him. And he said, no, that was Norman Lear. And I said, we spoke to him too recently,
yeah.
but in an earlier incarnation of our radio show.
Yeah.
I do remember talking to him, and he was wonderful, and he was funny.
Really nice man.
And I hope, you know, Scott Baio didn't push him over the edge.
Right. He is, if you're going to point fingers at the rise of Scott Baio, I guess Gary Marshall would be the first finger you would point. He cast him originally in Happy Days. Do you remember, I don't know, I was. This is weird trivia, but because we were talking so much about Scott Baio after his speech at the convention, he was not Fonzie's first nephew on the show. Do you remember that?
Yes, it was Spike.
Yes. Oh, am I proud of you. That's very good. Only for a couple of episodes, and it was a guy who didn't have anywhere near the magnetism of Scott Baio, certainly.
No, but he was tougher.
Yeah, he was way tougher.
Hence the name Spike.
Right.
But
right.
He was cute, and yeah, he didn't have the charisma. Speaking of which, you may owe me money because, you know, we forgot to do this yesterday, but Scott Baio spoke early as I was listening to Ro and Anna explain before everybody in the world was watching. Scott Baio kind of got his little speech out of the way because at one point he goes, why did I say yes? Why am I doing this?
Right.
And he's talking about being an American and what it means to be an American. And we had a little side bet going, a $10 bet, I believe.
It was $10. It was.
That, you know, sometime during...
Half my daily salary. I get... My wife gives me $20 every day, and I said, I'll put aside half of that to bet you that Scott Baio won't say something specific.
And what was that specific something?
His catchphrase from both Happy Days and Joni Los Chachi, wah, 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 which I don't think anyone said in the 50s.
No, but they might have said it at the RNC. I think we will go to the tape now.
All right.
Is Donald Trump a messiah? No. He's just a man. A man who wants to give back to his country, America. The country that has given him everything. A country that has also given all of us so much. And now it's time to give back to her.
Wah, wah, wah.
You're sure that wasn't edited? Because that almost
Kevin,
sounded...
Kevin, that was not edited, was it?
Nope, 100%
really?
Genuine.
Really? Because the sound quality was different.
His Why voice, didn't you make it a little tighter?
His voice
Jeez.
Changed.
He stepped off the mic. He dropped... he did something, and then he said that. Did
and mic drop.
Did he cut his sleeves off like Chachi used to do? Did he have no sleeves?
God, that wasn't even
You're
close
sure
to
You're sure that wasn't
real.
Edited? Because that... I'll
well,
give
when
you the
he
10.
Just gave it away.
Well, Kevin, there was like he could drive a Mack truck through the two pieces of audio there.
That's his cadence, Wendy.
Yeah, whatever, I
don't know.
I lose.
That
I was trying to get
sus-
by.
That seems very suspect.
Do you have change for a 20?
Do you know how hard it is to find a wah-wah-wah on the internet?
Wah-wah-wah.
I could not. It took me a good hour, honestly.
I should have just done it myself live as he was talking.
That
right
would have seemed more believable.
Great job, Kevin.
I'll take my 10 now.
And
Can I get 10 also for the work?
No.
That's part of your job. We were just parents there together.
Right.
We were a team effort.
No, go to your room.
And it's funny. I want listeners to realize the truth that you really do every day at lunchtime pull out a crisp 20.
I have. You want to see it? I have. I was given it to me. Here's my 20 for today.
See? It's And
it
listeners
is.
Think this is a joke.
No,
and so
I get $20 a day.
And I asked, does Terry hand it to you every morning with your lunchbox?
It's she leaves it on the dresser because it makes me feel more devilish.
Like exactly. Like, thanks for your services.
Like I've accomplished something. Just leave it on the dresser and then we wink. Or I try to wink. I can't wink. But, yeah, here's my 20 for today.
Love.
And I'm
Bill
senior
Love.
30. Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break. All kinds of things on today's show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. That would be bad. Speaking of the Cubs... We don't have to get into specifics of who passed away and how or why.
A longtime family friend of mine.
Right. Somebody you've known for many years.
Since
died.
I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And she's a family friend, was a family friend, Betty Kahinka. Loved her so much. And this woman was just really sweet to us on our birthdays, as she would call. We haven't seen her in a couple years, maybe.
Yeah.
Still lived in the area. And she would call and leave a voicemail for each one of us on our birthdays.
That's so nice.
Dylan, Michael, Jim, and myself every year without fail.
Oh, that is so nice.
And she passed away, and it was sudden.
Yeah.
And she was the biggest Cubs fan in the world. And she would come to our house with a little Cubs, little tote bag. A
right.
little Cubs tote bag. And I would kind of mess around with her and said, this is a Sox family. You really
right.
can't bring that in here.
She knew that going in, though, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, and we would joke about it. But as my husband told her son last night, I'm the biggest Sox fan in the world. and Betty was allowed to do whatever she wanted. If she came in with a Cubs shirt on or a tote bag, this is the one time in my life I never said anything.
Really? Really?
Never. He never did.
I know you went to the wake last night, and there was the Cubs were represented there, right? Would they have a banner or something?
They had this little Afghan that she always wore while watching the Cubs game, a Cubs flag, the W flag, you know, the one you put on the car. It was really sweet.
For why can't we win a World Series? Is that what the W stands for? What do we have to do to get better to win a World Series? How sad is it, though?
It is.
That, I mean, it's sad that she died, first and foremost.
No, I know.
It's sad that she is no longer with us. But on a year where they seem better equipped to go all the way than any other year, for that to be the year that you cash out, that's even doubly as tragic.
And it really, you know, weighed on her son. Obviously, he was distraught, two daughters as well. And he was explaining that she was on life support, and he kept putting the Cubs games on in the hospital. Like, come on, Mom, you got to make it. You got to see these Cubs games. And then he said, you know, and I'm just heartbroken, of course, that she died, but in a year where it may have turned around. And I said, well, who knows? Maybe you got somebody pulling the strings up there.
Maybe. At the game the other night, I was thinking that about Ernie Banks, about Mr. Cub, that for not his whole life, I know he wasn't a Cubs fan his whole life, but as soon as he made the majors and he was a member of the Cubs, he was Mr. Cub, and that's one of the guys that should be here to see them win it all.
And Ron Santo.
And Ron Santo, certainly. I can't tell you, last year, as I'm watching the games, there was like a little picture of him in the box in my brain. I'm watching in the corner going, you know. You want so badly to see him win it all. A similar thing happened with my father-in-law, who was a gigantic White Sox fan. Every year he would say, even when they were picked for last, Jim would say, I think this is going to be the year. And I'd go, Jim, it looks realistically like they might only win 65 or maybe 70 games.
Let him believe.
I know, but, you know, you're talking baseball with somebody. You want to have some realistic slant to it. And then he died just a few months before, you know, they made it into the World Series and won the World Series in 05. So that's just, you know, that's so sad when you get that close to it, you still don't see it happen.
And you really are seeing the love of your hometown sports team surface everywhere. Cindy Gatziolas, who worked with us in radio and for the mayor's office of special events and was a wonderful woman, she passed away a year or two ago, and she was represented with White Sox stuff everywhere by the casket, and even the White Sox organization sent some flowers.
Isn't that nice?
And it's just you're seeing that more and more. I'm really excited about getting a Blackhawks license plate, but now I'm going to start thinking about a Blackhawks casket.
Would you consider that?
Yeah.
Would you do that?
Times they are a changing.
That would be cool. That would be pretty cool if you're going to go. If you have to go out, and you do. Spoiler alert: you do. Go out in style. Nothing wrong with that. The other night when we went to the game, when Kylie went to the Cubs game with me, during some of the innings, they flash people's birthdays up on one of the new scoreboards. And I think you have to pay for that. I'm almost sure.
Of course you do.
You have to give them a couple of bucks, and then they put...
I think it's a couple of hundred of bucks.
Is it that high?
I can't believe...
Is it?
I'm sure you have to prearrange it and pay for it.
Yeah. But is it a couple of $100? That seems...
If someone's done it, 312-981-7200, I can't imagine that going cheap.
Wow. Well, you know, sometimes they're specific. Sometimes it'll just say, Happy Birthday, Rachel, from Mom and Dad, or something like that. But there was one woman, they gave her whole name... And then they said, 103-year-old Cubs fan, and everybody goes nuts and is applauding. And then I say to Kylie, that lady is 103 years old, and she was not alive the last time the Cubs won the World Series. And then Kylie goes, wait, what? And I go, no, it's true. I said, actually, we're almost to the point in time where there's no one on earth that was alive the last time the Cubs won the World Series. That seems improbable, but true, we're almost there.
You are a balloon buster. I was going to say something else, but, you know, your father-in-law who loves the Sox, this is the year. No, it's not going to happen. Kylie, look at this. This woman has not even seen the Cubs win in her lifetime. You're Dr. Gloom.
I'm just here to make sure everybody has fun.
It's not working.
All right, let's take a quick
break. Real
quick. Yes.
We have 30 seconds here. So, Lulu, you paid for a birthday greeting at Wrigley?
At Wrigley for my dad's 80th, and I think if memory serves, it's a number of years ago, but it was like $75 or $100.
See? What are you thinking? A couple bucks.
Wow.
So every penny, though. It's his 80th birthday, so it was very cool.
Absolutely.
But it's only on the screen for about 30 seconds, right?
So be ready to take a picture of it.
That's correct. You got to be photo ready, and they tell you when it's going to be.
Oh, so, they do?
You know, and they do them all. Yeah, they tell you which inning it'll be in between and all that sort of thing.
And he loved it.
You got your camera ready and loved it. And we got a suite, and then we got him a jersey that said Big Lou and 80 on the back.
Oh, nice.
That is a birthday. Cool, right? I am just so glad he wasn't in the restroom when it came up. Like, I have to go to the bathroom. No, Dad, you can't.
No, you sit right there.
Thanks, Lulu.
Thanks,
have
Lulu.
A good day.
Okay, thanks.
All right, a quick break, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Summertime and the living is easy. Fish are jumping and the cotton is high.
Do the whole song, please. No. Come on, do the whole song.
Oh, your daddy's rich. And your mom, she's good looking.
Keep going.
So hush, little Billy, don't you cry.
You know, when I came in, I'm looking at the prices. I go, 2 drink minimum. I hope the songs are good. The songs are good. I'd come back here.
All right, good.
There's a great new book out called Seinfeldia. It's a testament to how great a television show. You already knew this, but now it's in print. How great a television show Seinfeld is. Find out all the secrets you never knew about Seinfeld. That's coming up right after the news with Veronica Carter. It's 10:30. Take it away, Veronica.
Could quite possibly be the best television show in the history of the world.
It's right up there.
I was just telling you off the air, every single night, one or all of us watch an episode of Seinfeld. Maybe one episode, maybe three.
Yeah.
Every night before we go to bed. It's like a nice little nightcap where you don't have to really think about it.
Sure.
You laugh. It's a great way to end a night.
Yeah, I agree with you. Guess what, Wendy? There's a new book that talks about exactly that. It's called Seinfeldia. The author, Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, joins us right now by way of the telephone. How are you, Jen? Thanks for being here.
I'm great. How are you?
We're excellent. I'm not surprised that this got on the air, but I'm surprised that it became the big hit that it became the number one comedy on television. That's kind of shocking to me. Is it to you?
Yeah, it definitely is. It was a huge reason why I wanted to write a book about it, because it kind of makes no sense. If you especially look back at the culture of the time, late 80s, if you think about 80s sitcoms, we're talking about things like Silver Spoons and The Facts of Life. So this was so, so different, and it really doesn't make sense to me that it was a mass hit. It makes sense to me that it should have been a cult hit, but it turned into a mass hit.
And Jerry Seinfeld is very funny to me, but in my opinion, definitely, in many people's opinion, not the funniest one on the show. It was the whole ensemble that really brought that thing to life.
Yeah, I've written a lot about sitcoms. I wrote another book about a sitcom that was about the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and the thing that I've definitely learned is that it's so magical when you get the right cast together, and even a really well-written show can't quite make it if you don't have that cast magic, and this one might be the best, one of the best for sure, we've ever seen.
The night that it premiered, Jennifer, I did stand-up comedy for 10 years, and I was working at the Improv in Los Angeles, and Jerry came in and did a guest set at that Improv, and that first night, and the show at the time wasn't called Seinfeld, it was the Seinfeld Chronicles. Everybody was asking him, what do you think? What's going to happen? And he just said, I don't know. Anything can happen. We're hoping for the best.
How did he say it?
I don't know. It might be good. It might be a hit. I don't know. So we were all so happy for him that it didn't just take off. It really took off.
Yeah, it really should. And as you were saying, it really shouldn't have, not just because of the way the show was, but, all sides pointed to, this is not great. It ran for one episode in the middle of summer, the day after a national holiday.
How about that? And Noah Lane Bennis, that first episode.
Yeah. It's very weird. I don't know if you guys have watched the first episode lately, but it's extremely strange to watch. It's not quite all there yet.
Why do you think the decision in that first season or two, they showed a lot of Jerry doing stand-up, and then that kind of melted away? What was behind that, do you think?
Well, the original idea, and I think it was a good one, was showing how a stand-up kind of gathers material from his everyday life and then puts it into his act. So we would have to see his act at the end. That's the whole point. As they went on, they kind of developed a different formula for the show that was way more interesting. And what started to happen is it was really jam-packed, those scripts. And they needed to take anything out. One of the writers just told me recently that the reason they spelled yada yada with one D instead of two was to save space in the script. Like, this is what we're talking about. So,
wow.
Yeah. So the easy thing to do, right, when you're first trying to figure out what to cut is to cut the stand-up sequences, especially once they realized this was more about giving each of the main characters a crazy plot line that would, and then kind of bringing them all together at the end. That's what was cool and interesting about the show. So they eventually lost those.
You know, it's funny. My boys are just teenagers, but mom and dad always watched it, and they love it. And I mean, there are moments in my household when somebody gets frustrated with another, and I hear them go, "Jerry!" Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the funniest thing. Mm-hmm. This book is definitely sponge-worthy, I will tell you that. I was trying to think of some of the best moments, and I mean, you can't think of one or
There's
two.
Too many.
There are hundreds and thousands.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. People keep asking me in interviews what my favorite episode is, and I always preface my answer by just saying, you know what, I'm going to give you one, but it's different every time. So if you look at my interviews, I've given like different answers every time. And then someone will mention another one to me, and I'm like, oh, someone just mentioned the dingo ate my baby me yesterday. And I was like, crap, I haven't even been thinking about that episode, but I love that episode. So, you know, it's like... if you go through that, it's easier to find, like, oh, here's one or two episodes that aren't the greatest. But the rest are so, so good.
You know, one of the strangest things about this, Jennifer, is at the time, America didn't really know Larry David all that well. He was on Fridays for a couple of years, which was like a Saturday Night Live ripoff. And he was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and that didn't go well. But he was, like, not a struggling writer, but he wasn't a highly successful writer. So how did it come to be that he and Jerry hooked up to create this masterpiece?
I mean, this guy, you know, he's a genius, but goodness, doesn't he owe a lot to Jerry Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Because Jerry was the one who had been approached by NBC. He was pretty mainstream in terms of comedy, you know, at this point. Like, he was on his way up, you know, he was on a lot of the late night shows and stuff. So,
and Benson. I remember him being on Benson for a while.
What?
On Benson. Yeah. That was really not good.
Yeah, terrible.
I really recommend looking at clips because it's hilariously bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was on his way up and kind of just said to his friend Larry David at the club one night, hey, there, you know, NBC wants to do this thing. Do you have any ideas? And it turned out he did. And it really worked out great for both of them. It's such a just one of those weird little moments where you're like, God, if he hadn't seen Larry David that night, we may have never seen Seinfeld as a show or as the show we know and love now. So we're very lucky that he had the sense and the intuition to do that.
And George Costanza, loosely based on Larry David, is that what's supposed to be? Because now that I know Larry David better, I guess I see some similarities,
sure.
But George has taken it and built it all on his own.
Yeah, it was definitely an evolution like so many characters on television, really. First, Jason Alexander kind of thought he was playing Woody Allen. That was the best vibe he could come up with for, you know, having read the script. It's very wordy and neurotic. So that was what he went with. And you can actually see in the very early episodes, if you watch him, you can see he's almost doing a straight Woody Allen impression. And then he figured out it was Larry one day, because Larry said something like, of course someone would do that. I did that. You know, and he was like, oh, okay. And then he started to kind of go in that direction. And then I think it just became its own thing. And honestly, I mean, I think both the George persona and even to some extent the Larry David persona on Curb Your Enthusiasm have to be exaggerated versions of him. I don't think he really is that way like 24/7.
No, impossible. Michael let's Richards. Hope. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer.
No, I was just saying that. Let's hope.
Michael Richards got the part because he knew Larry David from Fridays. They were cast members on Fridays together, right?
Right. And he did have to come in an audition, of course, and get network approval and all of that, but he's just, you know, he's it, right? He's
yeah.
So brilliant. He's so perfect for that role.
The way, and it's almost an artistry, the way he choreographed his entrances, like the way he would open the door and look so panicked and close the door. And I know it was choreographed. He would talk about how he wouldn't just come in and do it. He would work on that. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, this is one of those, like, crazy genius situations, right? He just, I don't know how he even comes up with that stuff. All that stuff was him. That was not in the original character. That character is based on a real guy, Kenny Kramer. There are a lot of similarities, you know, between the real guy and the character, but that's definitely not part of it. You know, Michael Richards brought that part of his genius to playing that character, and I really feel like that was so important to that, the chemistry of the cast, because the rest is very kind of talky, you know?
Sure.
So this is perfect. Perfect balance.
You know what's weird is, like, now that I watch it at a different time, when it first came out, Kramer to me was like, oh my God, check him out. He is so funny. He's mm-hmm. so off the wall. And then I started really liking Elaine because she was just, you know, hanging with these guys and really holding her own. And now as I'm watching it, George is just my all-time favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as you change, as you mentioned, Bill, you reread books and you're a different person when you read them. Your favorite characters change, but still, all in all, one of the best shows on TV. Still on a
definitely.
Million times a day, too.
Yes. That's a huge part of the fact that I could write a book about this and people could care. And the fact that it kind of really does live on in our culture every day. You mentioned how your teenage sons are watching it now.
Yeah.
I think that's really important because that's how it continues. I remember watching All in the Family reruns with my parents. So I think it's very similar in that way. This is how its legacy kind of lives on in the culture. And now it's on Hulu, and I could hear my neighbors who are in college watching, totally like binging it. And for a while I was like, please stop. Oh my God, I can't hear that right now. But lots of smoking pot and watching, binging Seinfeld next door to us right now. So.
Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong's book is called Seinfeldia. It's available wherever books are sold. You can stick around for a little bit, Jen. We have more questions for you. All right, good. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's WGN.
Witch-a woman.
If you're a Seinfeld fan, boy, have we got the book for you. Seinfeldia. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong has written a great book about everything having to do with the Seinfeld show. Makes a great Labor Day gift. Labor Day is coming up. You don't know what to get your loved ones. Get them this book. Jennifer, at some point in the show, Jerry is pitching the network along with George on a TV show about nothing. It's, you know, it's almost like a mirror looking at a mirror. How was the network along the way as they were developing the show and the show was finding its legs? Was NBC totally on board, or were they tough on Jerry Seinfeld and everybody on the show?
A little bit of both, you know, which is very common, I think. This show, as we were talking about, kind of shouldn't have happened. So the fact that it did and that they gave it multiple chances is extraordinary. So you have to give them credit for that part. They did bury it in the summer for one episode when it first started, but the next summer, they brought it back mainly because one of the executives named Rick Ludwin, who was in charge of late night and specials, you know, pushed for it and specifically got it back on the air by getting rid of one Bob Hope special, which would have been 2 hours, and used the budget to get 4 episodes of Seinfeld made. That's why we have that very strange, no one's ever heard of a 4-episode you know, season before. And so he got that on the air for the next, in the summer again. So not great, but at least it had a chance. And the way it really started to get a chance was when they saw that people were staying for the new Seinfeld after watching Cheers reruns. And remember, Cheers was kind of the thing at the time.
Sure.
So, and they knew they were going to need a successor to it soon. So once they started to see that, that's when they gave it now a 13-episode season in mid-season the following year, and then it took off. Like, people really started talking about it because the episodes were getting to be some of the classics we already know and love. So that's when, you know, so it is the story, honestly, of a network giving a show a chance in a lot of ways. And it had to find itself a little before it became the genius show that we know.
You know what? I love rewatching it all the time. I do stumble upon an episode that I haven't seen. There was one recently that I swear I had never seen. George was going to pick up Jerry at the airport and his car broke down. And there was a guy holding a sign that said an Irish name. I can't remember it right now. And mm-hmm. George says, you know, let's just take the limo. And then they find themselves at like a neo-Nazi right. rally.
Right.
And they think George is like the leader of everything. It was so funny. But I, Peter, what's his name from Sports Night was on there.
Mm-hmm. I can't. Peter Krause.
Yeah, yes. And it's so fun to watch these old episodes and see all these old people, of course, from Breaking Bad.
Oh, sure.
You see mm-hmm. him in it. So many of these before they were. James Spader in an episode.
Yeah.
I love mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. You that's part of the fun. I feel like almost every time I watch it through again, there's like another person who's become famous.
Yeah.
And so you find them. This is probably only for me, but my recent find was I've been rewatching The OC, mm-hmm. and which I loved, the teen drama. And then I was watching the episode where Kramer starts his bus tour and Jerry's girlfriend from that episode is Julie Cooper on The OC, which is very exciting for me. So there's always like new random people that you're like, especially the girlfriends, right? Almost every one of those Jerry's beautiful girlfriends.
Oh, sure.
They're real and they're fabulous.
Terry Hatcher, right? Yeah. Isn't that Terry Hatcher? You know, the one particular episode, Jennifer, that astounded me was when Kramer decided to put the Merv Griffin set in his apartment and would pretend to have a talk show every night. Because I just went, this is like a dream. This is so amazing that this is on network television. It's so weird and twisted, but it was beautiful.
Yeah, I really like that episode, too. It's a very late episode. So it's, you know, most of the classics that we all talk about are kind of right in the middle there at height. But that one's very late. And the show got weird. You know, the show got weirder and weirder in those last couple seasons, I think, because they were like, they were like burning through material so fast, and it was like they didn't have Larry David there, and the writers were exhausted, et cetera. But, you know, there were those seasons are where we do still get that amazing, like, why Merv Griffin? You know, it's like there's so many things
right.
about that.
So
like,
funny.
What's happening? You
right.
know?
Yeah, sure. What about the disdain for the last episode?
And,
there's
and
so many.
Spoiler alert if people are binging and haven't seen it yet. Just, I feel safe to say that.
I won't give anything away, but fans of the show who had stuck by it through thick and thin all through the years, for the most part, are a little displeased with the way things turned up in the last episode. I'm fine with it, but a lot of people are not thrilled. What do you make of that last episode?
Yeah, first of all, I'm totally a defender of that episode. I think it plays so much better outside the context of the hype that the finale was getting at
right.
the time. I mean,
oh, we worked at a radio station at the time, Jennifer, and remember they had the final viewing party, and it was happening all over the world, and it shouldn't have happened that way.
That's the thing is, I mean, and we actually hadn't seen that kind of hype for just a television finale before. Television finales barely were a thing before then. Usually shows just kind of faded off the air and no one cared. This was like unbelievable. Paparazzi were scaling the walls to get a shot of like what might happen. Like there was all kinds of craziness. So I think there's nothing this finale could have done short of giving us the meaning of life that would have, you know, pleased people. And they felt, you know, there was just their expectations were so high. And then I think what's great about it is at least it makes a statement. At least it's trying something, you know, it's trying to do something interesting. It's not like a Friends finale. And I love Friends, but mm-hmm. it's kind of show Friends finale where like everybody ends up happy together. Then they move away and they grow up in the end. This is like making a statement. And that's what I like about it.
Yep.
I got to rewatch that. And speaking of Friends, in my opinion, that's the closest sitcom that came to Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And very different, but still, for the popularity and the tuning in appointment television, Friends was that show that did that.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Chico and the Man was written about a comic, you know, Freddie Prinze.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask if the Seinfeld one was the first time that's ever happened. But what was before Chico and the Man?
Oh, a bunch. Welcome Back, Cotter was after Chico and the Man. But so many, like Bill Cosby was a stand-up, and they would try to find things that worked to his stand-up. There had been a bunch over the years.
Because this was the first time I really, you know, I guess
everybody
that they
loves
showed
Raymond, kind of.
I
know,
guess, but the fact later that they showed him on stage was the first time that really. And I'm kind of glad they filtered that out because his life just got so much more interesting than him being on stage.
Yeah, that's true.
It's
that's
a great
true
book, Jennifer.
Yeah, I do think some, like, people playing themselves as a comedian, like an actual version of themselves with their last name and all of that. That was fairly new. I'm scared to say it was the first because there's always some weird thing out there, but you know, that was extremely new, and now it's all anyone does.
But Jennifer, they did it on radio for years, like Fred right. Allen or Jack Benny. They were essentially playing their stand-up versions as a human.
Yeah.
So what a great book. Seinfeldia is the title of it, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. And the author is Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong. Jennifer, great read right there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Like working with my sons, two teenage boys, you and Kevin.
What are you talking about?
All right, here we go. No, I'm not going. No, you go. You guys are just like babies.
I don't remember that.
Teenage men, Wendy.
Yes, we're teen men. That's what we are. How good are you at apologizing for things? Are you a good apologizer or not?
You know, I'm actually really great because I am the queen of offering way too much information.
Sure. Yeah.
And I really speak from my heart, and I'm a pretty good apologizer.
Do you know, this is according to an article on Huffington Post, there is one thing specifically that you are advised to not say when you're apologizing.
I think I know.
I was sure I knew. I was positive I knew.
Oh, I'm just being
funny.
And
I was wrong.
I'm sorry.
No, you should say the best thing you can say when apologizing is I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm not that good at it.
Before I tell you what it is, can I tell you what I thought it was?
Yes.
Because if I was still a betting man and Las Vegas was taking action on this, which would be weird, because why would they do that?
Then I would start gambling. If they right. did fun stuff like right. this and not just all sports
right.
bets,
right.
I would do
Instead of
it.
Having a sports book at your major hotels in Las Vegas, they would have bets
lifestyle.
On lifestyles.
I would
It's a very smart
make
idea.
A profit.
Very smart idea. All right. I was positive that the thing you're not supposed to do when apologizing is say, I'm sorry, but, and then you continue, I am sorry, but, and then you throw in like one more jab. So you're kind of half apologizing, but still making your case for why you're right.
When we had to go to that radio show boot camp when we were at another station, which mm-hmm. was, which Seinfeld character are you most like?
Yeah, it all ties in, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But remember what we were told? Like when someone says something and then they say but,
mm-hmm.
anything they said prior to the but is
a
lie.
Lie. That's true. That's
it
what
is kind of true.
Yeah.
Bill, I think you're cute, but.
Yeah, then as soon as you hear that, you go,
seriously,
well,
it negates
what?
It.
No, I know.
I think you're cute and
that's
you're
better
dressed
way.
Nicely today.
That's the better way to say something
yep.
is throw it that way. But if you're apologizing, like for anything, you know what? I thought about it and I'm sorry. But, and then you say, but the reason I did it is then it just waters it down. Okay, but here's
Can
the
I guess?
Yeah. Sure.
Is it a statement or a word or is it an idea? Because I think when you're apologizing, it loses all meaning if you blame someone else. Like if you say, I am so sorry, but the kids
but
were
Kevin
driving
told
me,
me
not-
to do it.
Right.
Right.
Again, that would be but. I am so sorry that I pulled the rug out from underneath you. I did notice that it needed to be vacuumed.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
the kids didn't do it. So, you know, I right. just, that's not a good way. Like, take ownership of your mistake.
You're very close.
Okay.
But here's what they tell you. This is experts, Wendy, who say this. This isn't just me.
Apology
These are
experts?
Apology experts at the Apology Center in Fort Worth, Texas, have said that the worst thing you can do when apologizing is to say the phrase, I never meant to hurt you. Isn't that interesting? Because I think that almost goes without saying. You wouldn't have to say that because if you were apologizing for any reason, wouldn't the person assume that whatever you did wasn't meant to hurt?
No.
No?
And I could be wrong, but there are times like if I've said something mean to the
mm-hmm.
kids,
mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, when you're mad at somebody, you try to say something to hurt someone else.
That's how it's played.
That's how it is. So if
right.
you say something crappy,
if you
you're
say
mad.
Something, if you're mad at somebody and you say something nice to them, that would you would lose.
Right. So if you're right. mad at somebody, you say something mean because you did mean
right.
to say something mean.
I'm so mad at you. Your hair looks great. That would you would just go, Well, this is stupid. Why would you say that?
Can I tell you, that would be awesome if I fought with you and you did that, because then I'd laugh and right. then the fight's over.
Oh, all right.
That's so that's a great diversion.
Right.
But I have explained that, you know, so-and-so said something mean to me. Well, you know what? They meant to do that because they were mad at you. They were trying to hurt your feelings.
True.
So apologize for saying, so because that's true.
Yes, yes. Here's what they say over at Huffington Post. Chances are you have had to apologize many times in your life, and there's a good chance that you've uttered the phrase, "I never meant to hurt you." Stop doing that, says apology expert and author Caroline Miss. In a talk for OWN's Super Soul Session speaker series, I didn't know that existed until just now, Caroline Miss, a spiritual seeker, a researcher, and an intuitive, I would like to be described as that. At some point in my life, Wendy, could you introduce me? If we ever meet somebody at a party, could say, "This is my partner, Bill. He is a spiritual seeker, a researcher, and an intuitive." And I'll go, "I knew you were going to say that."
Will you text that to me? Because I'm going to forget all of it.
I'll send that to you. She took on the topic of forgiveness and healing and explained in no uncertain terms why the phrase, "I never meant to hurt you," is never a sufficient apology, no matter who it comes from. Here's what she says. Picture that a person is coming up to you and saying, "Wow, bummer," I quote, by the way, "Wow, bummer, I'm sorry I did this, but you know what? I never meant to hurt you. And can we just call it a day?"
That's a terrible apology, first of all.
Bummer? Is this like a surfer coming up to me and apologizing?
Hang loose.
"Dude, I'm sorry I hit you with my board. I never meant to hurt you."
So should I add surfer to the spiritual seeker, intuitive, and
this
researcher?
My partner Bill, he is a spiritual seeker, a researcher, intuitive, and he just got a board. Just say he's board certified, and only you and I will know what that means. As tempting as it can be to move on and bury the hatchet, that type of an apology will not sit well with the person on the receiving end. That whole thing, "I never meant to hurt you," that's the thing you cannot forgive, she says. I don't think that would bother me much. I would just assume whoever did hurt me and is apologizing, I wouldn't think it was like a long-term game plan for them to hurt me.
That's why it's a waste of words. I got to tell you, I think in all the times I've apologized, which has been hundreds, and that's just this morning, I have never said that.
I don't think I have either.
I have never said I never meant to hurt you.
Because it's understood, isn't it?
Well, and there are times you do mean to hurt someone. Not
short
physically,
term,
but you know.
You've never, like when you go home, you don't just sit in a dark room and go, "What could I possibly do to hurt someone?" You don't, nobody does
not
that.
Not a dark room.
Right. It's a well-lit room. Right? But you would, I mean, nobody I know is spiteful enough to be plotting something for weeks and months and years. And then if you were, why would you go and apologize? You go, "Well, my plan finally happened."
Right.
The rookie.
Kudos to me.
2002, I finally made it happen.
High five me on that.
Right. Bummer.
Can we take a break and can we talk to some people about this? Because
yes.
I honestly have to say, if I've apologized to someone, I'm specific. I did this and I shouldn't have. I really apologize. I hope you can forgive me.
Right. That's genuine.
But
that's
I have never said I never meant to hurt you, because a lot of times I did mean to at least wound them.
Exactly. All right. Your thoughts on this? We're at 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm sorry. So sorry. That I was such a fool.
That's a good apology.
That is... You know what? That is a good apology.
I'm sorry, I was such a fool.
I was such a fool.
That was not me, by the way.
She's got a pretty singing voice there, Peggy Lee.
It's Brenda Lee.
Brenda Lee. Look outside the window. Goats have formed. There's a contingency of goats outside the window.
I'm sorry the listeners had to hear you do
that. I am too. I'm sorry you had to hear it. I never meant to hurt you, listeners.
Yes, you did.
I didn't. That's the phrase that you are not supposed to say, according to Caroline Miss. Who is she? Well, she's a spiritual seeker. She's a researcher. She's an intuitive and an apology expert. She says the one phrase you should never say when apologizing is that one. "I never meant to hurt you."
Because sometimes you do mean to hurt
them.
Right. Joe, what do you think about all this?
Well, I don't even know why you're talking about it. I don't apologize. I'm never wrong.
Good for you. That's rare.
Yeah. No, no, no. I'm kidding. No, really.
Let's get your wife on the other line, okay, Joe?
She's listening. So. Oh.
And nodding her head no.
She's listening, so trust me, I'll be wrong when I get home. So
what will you say?
So when I apologize to someone, I usually, I'll ask forgiveness as opposed to saying I apologize or forgive or I'm sorry. You know, and I'm curious, does this article say a way to properly apologize, or does it just say don't do that?
It just says specifically that when you're searching for the right words in your apology, those would be the worst words you could choose. I never meant to hurt you.
But they don't tell you how to do it the right way.
They do not say the right
and
way.
And Joe, and I might be mistaken, but it sounds like you're the type of person who is not technically apologizing. You just said, I'm not going to apologize, but will you forgive me? I mean, if you're wrong, you will say I'm sorry.
But it's actually, I think it goes a little bit deeper. You're cutting through all the red tape. If you say I apologize, you're pretty much sitting there saying, I'm not going to tell you that I'm sorry. I'm not going to ask for forgiveness. I'm saying I apologize, and you kind of need to figure the rest out. But if you say forgive me, you've cut through all that red tape, and you're saying, listen, I'm wrong. I'm without excuses. I need your forgiveness to carry on. Basically, that's how I see it, at least.
Yeah, that makes some sense. It really does. It's so funny. In our society, those words come easy to us. Like if I were just to say... I don't know you, Joe, but if I were to say to you, Joe, I got some new, my uncle Dave died, the first words you would say are, I'm sorry. Those words come easy to us as a society, but for some reason, the act of apologizing doesn't. You follow me?
This is true. Yeah, you're right about that. And it does. It comes very, very easy to say, I'm sorry, but I guess if it's a personal offense, I guess you could, you know, saying forgiveness, asking for forgiveness,
that's a little trickier.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on what it is, too, because if you ate, like, the last mini Kit Kat,
yes,
you would say, I am so sorry.
Something minor you can pull out an apology for.
That I wouldn't waste.
I wouldn't be sorry for that. I wouldn't be sorry for that.
Oh, yeah.
Tell your wife that.
Thanks, Joe. Have a good day.
Thank you.
I have to say this. When I'm wrong, and it happens quite often, I am very good at apologizing. You can ask my family. I think about things and I go, well, I really messed that up. I could have done this way better or differently. And I'm the first one. And I don't remember my parents.
They didn't.
I don't think parents, I know we're one generation removed, but I just think that we've all kind of evolved a little bit to being more open to our own mistakes.
Because we have evolved as parents. And, I'm not saying I'm a cool parent because I'm still a parent. But when you make a mistake, I say, you know what? I screwed that one up.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing either.
Yeah.
And then you have the old school way. Don't apologize. It shows weakness.
Right.
You should show weakness. Everybody has some weakness and strength.
Yeah, I agree.
It's okay to say, hey, I'm wrong.
I did this incorrectly.
Up.
Yeah.
We're good.
I think, well...
We're good people.
I hope so.
But... I don't know. Tim, what do you think?
Hey, Bill, Wendy. I think the worst one is when someone says, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
What you're actually doing is not apologizing for your actions, but you're actually apologizing for the other person that you've offended.
Right.
So technically, that is really crazy. And those experts, I'm really sorry they feel the way they do about their worst comment, because I think mine is the right.
And I agree with you, because that's the blame game, when you're kind of blaming someone else for your screw
up. Of course.
And, I'm sorry you feel that way. To me, that is no apology at all.
Yeah. It's way watered down, isn't it?
It's kind
extremely...
of saying you think wrong.
Yeah, it is. It's a polite way of saying exactly that.
You think incorrectly.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim.
Right.
I think his phone broke up a little bit.
I think so,
I'm sorry
too.
About that.
I am too.
I didn't mean to hurt him.
No, of course not. All right. So what we've learned from this is simple. If you follow the learnings, the teachings of Carolyn Miss, she says, do not say those words. But I think, and I'm going to stick by this, I think the harsher version of this, instead of saying I never meant to hurt you, which is kind of understood, is to tack on the word but, and then like one quick attempt to get your point across. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it, but The reason I did it is it's still combative,
yes.
Isn't it?
And so spiritual seeker, researcher, intuitive, mm-hmm. and board certified. That's what I'm supposed to say.
Yeah,
when
say
I introduce
that about
you to
me,
people.
Right?
All right.
And don't smirk. Just say
it
with a straight
out.
Face.
All right, it's Wendy Snyder here along with my partner, spiritual seeker, researcher, intuitive, and board certified, Bill Leff. I didn't laugh.
I know. It's just I had a lot of adjectives that I'm not used to. I don't usually get that many adjectives. All right, we'll take a quick break. You know who's going to join us? Now, usually we talk to Dean Richards on Thursday.
It's Thursday?
No.
Darn it.
It is Wednesday, but Dean doesn't know that. Because he's been blindfolded and put in a room, and he has no idea what day it is, what time it is. So we'll talk to Dean Richards and find out what movies are coming out this weekend. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We were talking about I'm sorry, and a lot of people are texting in. Somebody says, you know, I'm sorry if I made you feel that way. That's not a good way of doing it. Maybe you should say, I'm sorry that I made you feel. Although that's still...
In that instance, you're stressing that you did make a mistake.
Yeah,
yeah, that sounds better.
How about
that's
say,
cleaner.
I'm sorry.
And just leave it at that.
Somebody says, I'm sorry has lost its meaning.
I'm sure for some people, it depends on how legit they deliver it. You can tell when somebody apologizes to you, you can tell if they mean it or not, can't you?
Yeah. You have to do the sad eyes.
Yeah.
The hurtful stare.
Yes.
When trying to explain to my mother that her words did hurt me, she wouldn't apologize. Her side of the story was that wasn't her intention. Get over it. As you can tell, we had a very close relationship.
Wow.
LOL.
That doesn't sound good.
And this is a little off, but sort of true. If you're not supposed to say, I didn't mean to hurt you, where does that leave poor boy George? But that was, do you really want to hurt me?
Right.
A little off, but...
Close.
Close enough.
So close.
We'll talk to Dean Richards after the news.
This news report is sponsored by Midwestern University's Multi-Specialty Clinic, and here with the news is Kim Gordon.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
He's Dean Richards. He's a friend to not just you, Wendy, and myself, but to millions of Americans just like us.
And all across the seas.
Yep. Yep. And in the motherland.
From sea to shining seas.
The seven seas?
Yeah, the seven seas.
Yep, all seven of them.
And soon on other planets, I believe.
That's right.
I think so.
Those are the voices I've been hearing in my head for years. I'm hoping.
Dean, I hate to start out. You know me. I don't like to start out with bad news,
no.
But entertainment lost a giant yesterday with the loss of Gary Marshall.
Sure did. I'm so sad. I mean, this year, please let this year end.
You guys, next year, I mean, we're getting older. This is what's happening.
It's unprecedented, though, this year. I mean, I can't think of any year where I've done this many obituaries.
Yeah.
And for really classic, beloved people, they don't come much more beloved, more talented, more likable than Gary Marshall, who in his long career was a writer before, you know, becoming a television producer, and gave us the television adaptation of The Odd Couple with Tony Randall and Jack Klugman. Of course, gave us the legendary Happy Days, which spawned Laverne and Shirley, which spawned Mork and Mindy.
Tony Loves Chachi.
Going for the topical with the Republican convention.
There you go. That's what I do.
Maybe it was Chachi's appearance at the convention that
that pushed him over there. I suggested that earlier.
Thank goodness we know that there was a heart that he had pneumonia and it wasn't like a heart attack or a shock or something.
Right.
One of the cast members talking about. at a political convention.
Yeah.
But, you know, he gave us those amazing television shows. And then really some of the greatest movies of the last 40 years. Julia Roberts and Richard Gere's Pretty Woman probably is, you know, top of the list.
That's his? I'm sorry, I didn't realize that.
That is his.
Flamingo Kid.
Dillon.
With Matt Dillon. I know Gary Marshall co-wrote that with a guy I know named Neil Marshall, and Neil told me, Without any quibbles at all, Gary Marshall was the easiest person to write with he had ever met.
Everybody says that about him.
Yeah.
Anybody that worked with him said he was the greatest guy to work with. He was no fuss. He was so common sense, so really very down to earth in his practice, and just really such a nice guy. I interviewed him many times through the years. The last time was just this past April for the movie Mother's Day, which I wish had been a little better. He did that Valentine's Day movie.
Oh yeah,
where there were seven or eight different scenarios of people going through, you know, getting ready for Valentine's Day, and then did the New Year's Eve, which wasn't quite as good as that, and then the Mother's Day that wasn't quite as good as the other two.
And Arbor Day was stupid. Let's be honest.
Arbor Day, it's just there's not a lot you can say about
nothing.
Trees,
right?
God knows he tried.
I know.
God knows the man tried. But I mean, gave us movies like The Princess Diaries, classics. Runaway Bride, Bette Midler's Beaches, Jackie Gleason's final movie, the one that he did
with
Tom Hanks. Yeah, that was shot here in Chicago because Chicago meant so much to him.
He went to Northwestern, right?
He sure did, and was so proud of being from Northwestern. Credits Northwestern for, you know, sparking all of his talent. Was very involved in alumni associations and organizations. Through the years, really loved Chicago, really loved Northwestern. Ron Howard, now Oscar-winning director, but was Richie Cunningham, of course, in Happy Days, said that Gary Marshall was the best boss that he ever had.
Oh, wow.
Greatest boss I ever had. His exact quote was, "His guidance influenced the entire course of my life, and I'm not alone in feeling that way about the impact of Gary's wisdom on those who are part of his universe."
How nice.
That's really high praise. Think about it. You know, is there somebody in your that has influenced the entire course of your life? That's what Gary Marshall meant to Ronnie Howard. And he worked with Andy Griffith.
Yes, that's so true.
Good
now,
point.
Dean, think
he
about this.
Barney Fife, personally.
He did. They were very close. Think about this. He's in on the casting for this movie, Nothing in Common. They already have Jackie Gleason in place. And they go with Tom Hanks, who at the time was a sitcom actor. He had been in a couple of movies like Bachelor Party, you know, just real light fare movies. And Nothing in Common was a little grittier. So maybe without that movie, Tom Hanks doesn't become Tom Hanks.
Right. You're so right. I mean, he could have taken a completely different trajectory in his career. I think it gave him the confidence to know that he could do drama. I have no doubt in my mind that if you ask Tom Hanks, he'll tell you, much the same way that Ron Howard did, that working with Gary Marshall was influential in his life. Because I can't tell you how much their two personalities are so similar, so down to earth, so nice, so normal, so professional, so talented, cutting away a lot of the BS that surrounds people of that stature.
Yeah.
Neither of those guys had it.
Wow. So he will certainly be missed. Also, we neglected to mention the brother of Penny Marshall, Laverne from Laverne and Shirley. So they worked together on that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He was 81 years old, by the way.
Well, you hear people living to be, you know, when you got your Silver Surfer Award, Silver Circle.
Half the audience was 90 years old.
Well, your mother was there.
It was just our parents. So there's like half the audience was 90 years old. I could have made a fortune if I had a Geritol consumption there that night.
Well, everybody was mentioning their parents in their 90s. Jay Levine's mom was over 100, or dad.
And dad. I think both of his parents were
And
there.
It's like, so you hear 81, and in a way you're thinking that's too young.
It's kind of young. It is kind of young. He died from complications of pneumonia after he suffered a stroke. It's just very unfortunate. 81 these days is
the new 30.
Super young. It really is.
But if I can find a silver lining, and that's what I do, Wendy. I'm a silver lining finder.
Really. Yes,
I am.
Half full.
I'm a glass half full person, and I feel like I'm getting ripped off in bars when they do that to me. But anyway.
Is your sippy cup half full?
Yeah. The beauty of him is, or anybody in the arts, is that there's a legacy to be seen for years and years. You can go back and look at his work. It's so many professions, no matter how great of a human being they were when they died at 81, their work is kind of lost. But with Gary Marshall, we all have hours and hours and hours to watch and enjoy.
Not only his work, but how many people he influenced.
Absolutely.
You know, and what, you know, the successes of Ron Howard, say, for example, of Tom Hanks, of, you know, Julia Roberts has, you know, there was a reason that Julia Roberts was in those movies after she won an Oscar, was in those movies like Valentine's Day, I don't remember if she was in New Year's Eve. I think she was.
She may have been, yeah.
But she was in Mother's Day. There's a reason that she was in movies like that that probably an Oscar winner would not be part of.
Yeah.
It was because of her affection for Gary Marshall.
That says it all. It really does.
Did you want to play something?
Yeah. Can I just play a minute or two of audio? This is Gary Marshall was a writer and a producer, but from time to time he would go back and act. And he's in one of the funniest scenes in Lost in America. I'll set it up really quickly. Albert Brooks is at the Desert Inn in Las Vegas and has lost, his wife anyway, has lost all of their money. Their nest egg is gone. Don't say nest. Don't say egg. Don't say nest egg. So what happens is Albert Brooks decides to go into the boss's office there at the Desert Inn and explain to him how it would be better if they would give them their money back. So listen to a little of that.
In advertising history, you give us our money back.
I beg your pardon?
Give us our money back. Think of the publicity. The Hilton Hotels has these billboards all over Los Angeles where the winners of these slot machine jackpots, their faces are all over L.A., and I know that works. I've seen people at corners look up and say, maybe I'll go to the Hilton. Well, you give us our money back. I don't even know now because I'm just coming off the top of my head, but a visual where if we had a billboard and the Desert Inn handed us our nest egg back, this gives the Desert Inn, really, Vegas is not associated with feeling.
Well, first of all, those people on those signs, they won. You lost.
But that's it. That's the campaign.
What's the campaign?
You gave my wife and I our money back because you reviewed our situation and you realized that we dropped out of society and we weren't just gamblers and we made a mistake and you gave our money back. Do you know you couldn't get a room in this place for 10 years?
Then everybody will want their money back. All the gamblers will say, hey, go to the Desert Inn and get our money back.
Not gamblers. You keep all the money. It's just that my wife and I aren't gamblers. That's what I'm saying. That's the distinction. My wife and I represent the few people, and I'll tell you something, there's probably nobody else that's ever going to come and have this happen. So really, probably we're the only two. We represent the people who have taken the chance, and we made a mistake, and then the Desert Inn corrects it and gives it back. There is a warm feeling here.
But you don't think everybody then will want their money back?
No. In the campaign, you make a clear distinction between the bold, who would be my wife and I, and then all the other schmucks who come in to see Wayne Newton.
I like Wayne Newton.
I said Wayne Newton.
What were you talking about? I heard you say schmuck see Wayne Newton. I like him. That makes me a schmuck.
Oh, no.
Makes me a schmuck?
Yeah, and then Gary goes on to explain that he's not Sandy Claus. They're not giving the money back.
That's so great.
He'll be missed tremendously. We'll talk more with Dean Richards in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dean Richards is here to talk about movies. Dean, the new Star Trek movie, Star Trek Beyond, opens this weekend. You've seen it. What are your thoughts?
I loved it. Can't wait for everybody else to see it. This is the third in this reboot franchise that stars Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto. Zoe Saldana, John Cho, reprising all the old characters that we know from the television show and the original movie series. This one is, I'm placing this number two favorite in this reboot. I liked it better than the last one.
Yeah.
And I liked the last one just fine, but this one just goes above and beyond. It's big and it's bold and it's explosive. It's got a great story of how the Starship Enterprise is lured into a trap and is boarded, and the crew is taken, kind of captured, taken prisoner, some escape, and their attempt to try to free themselves. So while this is big, it's a huge story and beautiful and amazing special effects. It's about one of the most interpersonal movies that I've seen in a long time as well. And I think that that's what really made this for me, is that as the crew is, captured or, trying to free their friends and their co-crew, they're kind of paired off. So the movie becomes all these little vignettes of little things that are happening between the characters. And you really get some lovely personal stories. It's almost like going behind the scenes with these characters that we've known all of our lives. It's almost like you know, knowing like when they're not flying the Starship Enterprise, yeah. what do they talk about? What are their relationships? Oh. What are their interpersonal relationships like? You know, we saw in the last movie the relationship developing between Uhuru and Spock.
Yeah.
That's furthered in this movie. One thing that's been talked about greatly, so I don't really think it's a spoiler, is that the character that John Cho plays,
Mr. Sulu,
is revealed as gay in this movie, which was a tribute to George Takei.
That's how he
Oh my.
Oh my.
Oh my.
I love that guy's posts on Facebook and Twitter,
hilarious.
By the way. I know.
He's a hilarious.
But he's not happy about this.
He's come to terms with it.
Has he?
But he said that what he really thought was they should have introduced, I mean, he's a gay actor who played a straight character in this movie forever. And said that he's glad that there is a gay character that's been introduced into the Star Wars franchise. He thought it should have been somebody
Star
new.
Trek.
Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
That it should have been a brand new character and not one that was already, that you already had some history with.
Yeah.
But since then, he's fine with it. You know what? The scene is so quick and so fast. It's not a big deal, really, in the movie at all. And when I talked with John Cho this past weekend, he says that, you know, he loves that it's a big deal, but it's not a big deal.
Right.
It's treated like anybody else would greet their significant other, you know, quickly. He has a little daughter, and, you know, it's just not a big deal in the movie.
Dean, one of the actors, Anton Yelchin, died a few weeks ago in a car accident, a very strange car accident, and the producers just said that in the future that character will not be recast, that Mr. Chekhov will no longer be in. And they haven't figured out how to write him out yet, but they're not going to find some new actor to replace Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, it's. I got to tell you, it was a little bit distracting watching the movie because he's a significant part of this movie. I think he's a little more integral to this movie than he has been in the past. And it's just downright distracting in the beginning every time that he's on screen that you are remembering this horrible freak accident that took this very talented actor's life at a pretty young age. You know, everybody's shocked. The whole cast, you know,
sure.
I interviewed them this past weekend, and, you know, everybody is still shell-shocked from the death of their friend.
Mm, so sad. So it sounds like you love this. What is your Dean's List on this?
I'm giving it a Dean's List A.
I
wow.
like that.
Yeah,
good.
I really liked it.
Very good.
I really liked it.
Another television show come to the big screen, AbFab, or Absolutely Fabulous.
What everybody's excited about that.
It's funny you should say that because during the break, I'm just opening my mail here, and I had this big box on my desk from the studio. You know, they send me, you know, like junk from
swag
to,
we call
to promote
it.
The movies, right?
Yeah.
Junk.
Or junk. They like to call it
as
junk.
As I call it, the reason you pay $20 for a ticket.
Right.
Is because they're sending dopes like me junk like this to try to. And almost, I mean, usually I put the stuff on, I give it away on Facebook. I give it to fans of the movies and they like it. But I think this one I may keep. It's a red hat, red baseball cap that says, "Make America Fabulous Again."
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Very funny. I was a big fan of the TV show. Absolutely Fabulous, and I saw the movie last night. I laughed my head off with this movie, but I'm not sure that everybody's going to. I think if you've never seen Absolutely Fabulous before, and I think there probably is a fairly significant.
I haven't seen it. I've seen like one or two seconds of a couple.
That's it?
I mean, I really didn't get into it.
Yeah, I think you may actually be in the majority with this. It was a BBC show that ran on PBS in the United States here on Channel 11. But, you know, they used to run the reruns all the time. And I just got hooked into it. These two train wrecks of, you know, these two women who are, you know, just like walking vodka bottles.
Yeah. See, that's why I didn't watch it, because it hit too
little
close
too
to
close
home.
To home.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
A little too close to home for you. They're in the PR business. They think they're a lot more important than they really are as they stumble through one disaster after another. I'm just not sure that if you don't have any history with the show, that you are going to find it as hilariously funny as people who do. That said, I laughed my head off.
Oh.
There's so many original characters. Like, almost everybody is back. in this movie, reprising their weird and train wreckedless kind of characters. I loved it. It's you know, the story of how one of the characters accidentally knocks supermodel Kate Moss into the river, and she's thought to be dead. And the police are looking for her. She's trying to hide. She's trying to escape the country.
So it's a plot line we've seen a million times.
So as you can see, a romantic story this time.
Yeah. How long has this been off the air, though? That's my question. Because even if you did like it, hasn't it been not airing
been a little while.
Double-digit years?
I'll look it up real quick here and see if I can find that out of when actually went off the air, because...
But it's not like Entourage, where it had just gone off the air and then there's a movie. Some years have passed.
Yeah, no, it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
Because it surprised me that they were making an AmFab movie. Like, where were you 10 years ago?
I think they may have... Is this the second one, Dean, or is this the first one?
There was one that was called Absolute... I'm trying to remember. Absolutement.
Right.
It's like a French kind of spinoff of the name. They did try once before. I'm not really so sure of the history of all that, but the TV show was originally from 1992 to 2012, so it was on the air for a pretty long time.
Yep.
I don't know when they stopped running the reruns of it. All I can say is I missed it greatly. I loved the characters. They are just a complete mess, every last one of them. Jennifer Saunders and Joanna Lumley are back as Adina and Patsy. And apparently there was still plenty of vodka to pass around.
That's very good.
To make the storyline work.
Dean's List on Absolutely Fabulous?
I'm giving that a Dean's List B.
Not bad. Mm-hmm. And Dean, we're out of time. We have less than a minute, but Lights Out comes out.
Lights Out. You want super, super scary movie. Super well done. Beautifully made. I mean, like so... disturbingly scary. If you like movies like that,
I'm in.
You're gonna like this one. And oddly, you know, the storyline is talk about storylines not being anything new. Strange creature in a house, mother trying to protect her family.
Oh,
you know, that's what I want.
And we're all afraid of the dark.
That's all you need, and this is scariest movie in a long time.
Oh, excellent!
Gotta wear my Depends.
Scariest
Dean's
movie
List on
in a
Lights
long
Out.
Time. Just to get Wendy to wear her Depends.
those flowered ones.
With those giant extra large beverages that they sell at the movies, that can be a mess.
Yep. Don't sit near Wendy.
I'm giving that a Dean's List B plus.
That's not bad either. Yep. Well, a solid week. Star Trek Beyond, Absolutely Fabulous, and Lights Out. All getting good marks from Dean. Dean, thanks. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
All right. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Tim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's the second half of our show where we try to make good on everything we messed up in the first half of the show.
That's not possible.
We're not in 2 hours. We're thrilled that you're listening, and we invite you to play along at 312-981-7200. Can I share with you a moment? I was not supposed to be privy to this, but after the first half of our show, as we all went our separate ways to pick up lunch, I needed to go into the green room to respond to a text, and Kevin, our producer, didn't know that I was in the green room, and I heard Kevin say a word that might be a swear word. I don't know what language.
You don't know what a swear word it is?
I know most swear words, but Kevin...
You work with me, for gosh sakes.
I know.
I've
heard
all.
Things. Reagan McNeil from The Exorcist said to me at one point, boy, that girl swears a lot. Kevin said a word that... I don't think it's a word in English.
Well, don't say it, even if...
Should I not say
it? Well, yeah. Is it a swear word in another language?
Probably not.
Well, I don't need a probably.
Do you want to reenact the word? Because I know you didn't know I was in the green room to hear you. I don't know what got fouled up. Something got messed up.
I think I dropped something, yeah.
Kevin dropped something, and he was extremely...
You do that 10 times a day.
Did I say snappy? Was that it?
Yes.
Said, oh, snappy.
Kevin says at the top of his lungs, oh, snappy. What? That's the word he decided to vent his hostility, his frustration. Oh, snappy.
I am proud of you.
Thanks, Wendy.
Because I would have been MFing it over the place.
I know.
Hey, guys, don't cuss at me, but can I interrupt for one second?
Yeah, sure, of course.
I just want to let you know that Donald Trump has officially arrived in Cleveland for the Republican National Convention. He was met by his VP pick, Mike Pence, and his family.
So, da-da-da,
it's officially, he's officially there.
He's there.
No more presumptive.
That deserves
been there already for 2 days but he officially has arrived. The airplane has landed, and
I think we still have to say presumptive until we don't?
Not since they voted yesterday.
Yeah, it was,
so now it's no longer presumptive.
Right.
Oh,
he's the Republican presidential nominee.
How could you not know that? I know you like saying the word.
I'm sorry.
Well, he didn't watch yesterday. We'll give him a little pass.
I didn't get to see any of last night's presentation. I read little transcripts. Yeah. I read little bits. I had so much going on.
Special.
I watched the ABC After School special called the Republican National Convention. But it occurred to me last night, I was in the middle of a bunch of different things, and I said to myself, oh, snappy, I'm missing the Republican National Convention.
I'm going to try and use that.
Snappy.
Why did you choose that? Of all
I don't know.
You could have said anything. Or just made a guttural noise.
He knows that a guest could have been.
Right.
Because I saw you in the green room, and I said, what are you doing? And you said, I'm a guest on Amy Guth's show.
He said he's spying on Kevin.
I wasn't spying.
Let's see what swear words he says.
I just had a text I needed to respond to before I left for lunch, and I didn't want to get in anyone's way. And I certainly didn't want to be subjected to the language that was going on in the office with Kevin and they're dropping things. So...
Snappy.
Is that even, I know you, are you Googling it? Because I don't even know where that, is there a background behind that, Kevin? Why'd you think of that?
It just came to me.
Yeah?
Yeah,
it's going to take off, I bet.
I hope so.
I'm going to start using it.
I'm going to have a giant poster made and hold it up at Kevin's wedding.
Is it C-H?
Or it's S-C-H, I think.
S-C-H.
So there is a C in it. It's not just S-H.
You know, I don't know. I
think is it I-E or Y?
Why?
I see a why.
With a bunch of exclamation points.
Why?
30 exclamation points.
I wasn't looking that up, but I was looking up this weird picture when Kim mentioned that Donald Trump has arrived.
In every sense of the word.
You're right.
Right? Yep.
With Mike Pence in
Were they
tow.
Fighting, by the way? I wonder if they were squabbling.
No, not right now.
Not
They're
in front
still
of everybody.
On the honeymoon.
Is that what it is? No, because you didn't see any of the 60 Minutes interview. Trump seemed irritated with him through the whole thing. And he didn't do anything. He just seemed like, I don't want this guy sitting next to me. I don't want him on the ticket. He just had this body language like, they're making me do this. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, but he is Donald Trump. He has had his way or the highway the whole time.
Yeah.
If he truly didn't want Mike Pence, why would he be forced to have him?
I can't figure it out. Although, like I said, was it yesterday or the day before? John McCain truly didn't want who he was stuck with. He didn't want her.
I think he did at first.
I don't know.
It sounded like a smart move with her on paper. And then when she became animated.
Then he didn't like it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the book. The book that became the movie on HBO. The name of it is escaping
Snappy?
Me. It's called. Yeah, that's the name of it. You get the feeling from minute one when somebody said, I think Sarah Palin's the way to go. You could just see him just going, oh, no. Like, after all this, that's how we're going to lose this, is by you throwing me Sarah Palin. That's the feeling you got from it. I get that feeling with Trump and Mike Pence. I get the feeling Trump is just like, this is not my move. This is somebody else's move.
Yeah, but how could he allow that to happen? He's had his move the whole time.
Right, right.
So he had to have approved, maybe to keep the party together. They said, listen, you got to do this for us.
Right.
I can't see him going, okay.
All right. I have to tell you a story, but I have to tell you that I can't tell you who this story is about. And that's not fair. I wish I could tell you who it is, but I can't. A politician told me the story not long ago about how once it became obvious they were running and they were serious about running, the party approached this person and said, look, we're behind you. The party's behind you. But from this moment forward, you do things our way or we're not behind you. And that equals you losing. So even though this particular person, who is a fairly high profile person, I can't say more than that. But he said from that moment on, the party had him doing things that he was 100% against, didn't want to do them at all. But they said, hey, if you want our backing, we make the rules. You're the front man. But it's our call. That seems crazy to me. I wouldn't want to. Then I would just say, you know what? Then find somebody else.
What doesn't seem crazy to you in this whole election process?
Every part of it.
I mean, and now it's just there's big highlighter markers on it. Like it's right. getting, it's never been right. And now we're finding out just how wrong it's been.
Right. I know. I know.
I might have some information, according to the New York Times, on how Donald Trump ended up with
how
Mike
it became Pence.
Pence. Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's do that.
And look at the picture of Mike Pence at Chili's celebrating.
Oh, I know.
It's got
we need
the
to
internet
talk about
abuzz.
That too. We'll talk about that. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's the O Schnappy Hour on WGN.
Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
The name of the book and then the movie that followed about what went on behind the scenes of the campaign of John McCain and Sarah Palin is called Game Change. We had the authors on about 2 years ago. But read that book because the insights are amazing. Because you think it goes, this is the way I always thought it went. They come to the would-be president,
presumptive.
And they say, "What do you think?" It doesn't go that. It doesn't happen that way.
Well, according to the New York Times, how Donald Trump finally settled on Mike Pence. This is the story.
Yeah.
Donald J. Trump raged at the leaked reports of his plan to choose Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, as his running mate. In public, he denied having made a final decision, and he postponed a planned event to unveil his choice. They had conversations late into the evening. Mr. Trump repeatedly hesitated over selecting Mr. Pence, according to people briefed on the tense deliberations, who insisted on anonymity to describe the confidential talks. Now, even as his emissaries reassured Mr. Pence, Mr. Trump fielded a last-ditch appeal from Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, another finalist.
Here's how it went. Please.
He was on his knees. I think there's a picture tweeted of him on his knees and his hands in prayer.
Right.
Advisors and family members stressed over and over to Mr. Trump, this is advisors and family members,
yeah.
that he was selecting a running mate to unite the Republican Party. He was not selecting a new best friend.
Oh.
So family members and advisors, it seems.
Isn't it strange? Because every time I've heard a description of this or anything else Trump has done, it's always family members first and then advisors when you would think, and I get it that it's his family, but wouldn't you want in a situation like something presidential, something of that importance, wouldn't you want advisors to get the top billing?
They said advisors and family members.
Oh, they did? All right.
Advisors, they could have done it alphabetically.
Yeah, I guess.
But before flying back from a fundraiser in California, Mr. Trump had settled on a plan for the morning. This was Thursday, I believe, after having insisted he would not make a Friday announcement out of respect for the attack in Nice, France. He would reverse course appropriately enough on Twitter and name Mr. Pence as his choice late Friday morning.
What so was he with said, that? Because they were so adamant about the fact that they needed to respect the situation that happened. And then I know it wasn't a big televised announcement, but at this point, a Twitter announcement is just as lethal. It's just as big.
Oh, for him?
So, yeah. So what happened there, I wonder? Why did he go in just a couple short hours from, no, I'm not going to do anything tomorrow. We just had a disaster. Let's let that happen.
Because it was leaking out and he wanted to be the one to announce it, in my opinion. In Mr. Pence, the presumptive Republican nominee, who we no longer have to call presumptive, he's the Republican presidential nominee.
I'm still going to say presumptive.
You can say it all the time, even when he's president.
Right. Presumptive President Trump, I have a question. Why do I keep saying presumptive when you've been president for a year and a half?
In Mr. Pence, Donald Trump has found a running mate with unimpeachable conservative credentials, warm relationships in Washington, and a vast reservoir of goodwill with the Christian right.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Pence is viewed as a sturdy and dependable politician by Republicans in Indiana and Washington, and chided Mr. Trump for his proposal to bar Muslims from entering the United States, calling it offensive and unconstitutional in a Twitter post this past December.
Has he softened on that at all? Pence, I mean, not Trump? Because he was adamant. If you listen to his words at the time, he was furious about the whole thing about the banning of Muslims and the wall and stuff. And I don't remember, unless I've missed it over the last 48 hours or so, I don't remember anybody saying to him, now that you're the running mate, what do you think?
Well, I think that's a good thing. I think because the people who say, we don't want a wall, we don't want to ban Muslims,
yeah.
at least, you know, your running mate can talk some sense into you.
Oh, yeah.
It's, God, you know, I almost caught myself going, it's politics.
Right.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's sickening.
Yeah. Along that same vein, explain this to me, because I can't figure this out at all. Tonight you got Ted Cruz speaking. Now, Ted Cruz is referred to by Donald Trump as Lying Ted. So if
I think
you're
it's Lion.
Lion, apostrophe, Lion Ted. First of all, I'd wear a lion outfit then. I'd come up dressed as a lion.
I need
and just right.
courage.
I would just roar for 20 minutes. You want Lion Ted? You got him. Just keep roaring.
You know what? Anything could happen.
I know. But if you're Ted Cruz and they say to you, hey, Lion Ted, you know the guy that's been ripping on you for all these months and referring to you as a liar? Would you mind just coming up and doing a couple minutes at the convention to unify things? Is that cool with you? Why would he do it? Why bother?
At this point, I don't understand. I guess the only way just is to keep the party together.
But at what cost? Like, I question the scruples of all these people who say one thing and then do the other. These guys obviously don't like each other. There's no doubt about it. They don't like each other. So why would he want to unify the party and give points to Trump and say, look, I know we've had our differences, and yeah, it's funny, he calls me Lion Ted all the time. That's great. But this is your guy. You got to vote for this guy. I don't get it.
I don't either. And keeping the party together, I know, is very important to the GOP, the Republicans.
Of course.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But if they're so anti-Trump running this country,
just chalk it up as a loss.
Up.
Go. Look, we're having, like they do in sports, this is a rebuilding process for us. We're not going to win this one. Just at some point, you got to just cut your losses and go, we're in turmoil. We're not getting along. And I know the game that they're playing is, everybody has to rag on Hillary Clinton, and just they referred to her as the devil yesterday.
Lock her up.
They chanted. They chanted, "Lock her up." Ben Carson alluded to the fact that she's the devil last night. So I understand that that's the unification process, is to all hate her equally and together. I get that. But if I'm Ted Cruz and they say to me, "Hey, we've got some open time on Wednesday. Would you mind coming up and saying a few words?" Sure, I'd love to.
And we forgot about this. We only have about 30 seconds, Beatrice, but go ahead. What else did
I'm not going to keep you. How could he say, I would love to, but yet and still Trump dogged his wife. I mean, talked about her like a dog.
Remember
and
that?
And he's going to go up there and talk for him.
Right. So what's in it for him? Why do it?
It's keeping the party alive.
He's ego-tripping just like Trump. So as long as he can have the limelight, he's going to grab it whichever way he can, and that includes throwing his wife under the bus.
It's terrible.
And Bill, the key word, and Beatrice, I bet you would agree, you said, you know, they're hating on Hillary and everything. That's what this has all been about, hate. We have big problems in this country, in the whole world, and we've had
them. It is hate. That's all it is hate. They haven't said anything. I could respect them if they would say something, but they're acting like spoiled five-year-olds and just hate, hate, hate. And that's the main thing we tell our children, don't do. But they've seen these grown adults doing exactly that.
It's awful.
And I know we have problems in the world, and we had them before Trump, but this hatred doesn't help. It's
Absolutely.
Hate someone who's different than you or who doesn't agree
right,
with
thank you.
Thank you, Beatrice.
Yeah, I know.
I cannot stand this hate.
And it seems like it gets more intense. It doesn't seem to be letting up. It seems to get more and more intense.
Why don't you run a campaign where it's like, listen, I want to be president. I think I could change this country. You know, you make the choice, not like, vote for me or you're stupid. That side's terrible. Hate them. Love me. Why can't you do it in a correct way?
I don't know. I'll go back to John McCain for just a little bit. On several occasions, I saw John McCain, when people would say something bad about Barack Obama when they were running against each other, I saw John McCain stop it right then and there and say, hey, you know what? That's not the way we're doing things.
And
you
it
know?
Shouldn't be done that way.
Right.
This whole campaign season has been based on hate.
Right. Yep. It's scary.
And I hate it.
Of course you do. All right. We need to take a break. We've got some news coming your way. Aaron Katursky is at the convention that we're talking about. He has some stories for us about Melania Trump's speech the other night. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We were talking about the Republican National Convention that continues tonight. Is tonight the night that the Donald's speaking?
I think tomorrow, I think.
I can't keep this.
Veronica, do you know for sure? It's tomorrow night.
Pence is tonight, and Donald is tomorrow
night. And that's the closer, right? That's how you end the show with him, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
The closer.
Yeah.
So all the people who spoke already, nobody cares anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Even Scott Baio.
Even
At
Scott
some
Baio.
Point, people will forget about Chachi wah, wah, speaking. Wah. Wah, wah, wah.
Which he did not say that was edited. We had a bet. I want to give you the $10, and you're not taking
my money. I can't take it.
But you know this is going to come back sometime later.
Oh,
in
I'll
life.
Use it against you.
Well, just take it,
no,
then.
No, I'd rather be able to hold it over your head.
Are we hearing this? Kevin, are you hearing this? I'm offering to pay my $10 bet where Scott Baio, Chachi said, wah, wah, wah.
How about this? We double down. I say at no point during Mike Pence's speech tonight, does he say wah, wah, wah?
I'm not taking
double
that bet.
Right.
I don't really bet well, but no. I know better.
All right.
I want to, maybe I'll double or nothing. Do you think Mike Pence will bring up the picture of him at Chili's with his family that has made the internet go crazy?
That's a good bet. That's a very good bet. Explain for people who don't know what this picture is, because this is eerie.
It's unusual, but I guess in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But Mike Pence is suffering at the wrath of Twitter. All right, he had thousands of restaurants to go to, and he picked a Chili's.
Why wouldn't you?
I went to a Chili's for the first time in my life in Nashville this last time.
Yeah.
I had never been to a Chili's. It's fine.
It's fine.
Not bad. Right. Not fantastic. It's
right in the middle.
It is right in the
right.
middle. So NBC reports that Mike Pence had a few extra hours to kill. He and his family decided to grab a quick bite at, Chili's near the airport in New Jersey. The meal might have, like so many Chili's meals before it gone unnoticed.
Yeah.
However, this market occasion deserved documentation by the Pence camp. It says, busy weekend in New York, enjoying a quick dinner with the family at Chili's, looking forward to getting back to Indiana. And if you look at the picture, which you can find, just Google Pence at Chili's,
mm-hmm.
and it's Mike Pence, it's mm-hmm. his wife sitting across from him.
Sixpence, none the richer. That's her name.
Very good. And nice. I hope you have another one ready because his daughter.
Also named Sixpence.
No,
Richard,
you
junior.
Could have done better. That was
junior.
Lazy. She is sitting next to him. And everybody's freaking out because her reflection is not in the mirror in
right.
the booth at Chili's.
She's a vampire.
It does look pretty bizarre.
You don't see her reflection. There's a mirror. They're sitting in one of those
booths
where there's a mirror right there, and you see Mrs. Pence and you see Mike Pence, but his daughter is nowhere to be seen in reflection.
And it looks pretty bizarre, and I there are two camps here. The Daily Mail is saying it has to be Photoshopped because she has no reflection.
Why would they Photoshop it?
I don't know.
What does he have to gain from his daughter sitting next to him at a Chili's? That's not going to win people over.
But Twitter has completely blown up over this. Someone has made the reflection of his daughter in the mirror be someone else.
Yeah, it looks like Donald Trump is sitting next to him, but that's not the case. It's his daughter.
No, but there was some guy who went through and Photoshopped everything, saying, if you notice on Mrs. Pence's necklace,
yeah.
it looks like she's Photoshopped in too, because her necklace is actually cut off by the table. There are little rings on her necklace.
Right, 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 sure.
And there's a certain point that was circled where... It's the tables over. It does look funny when it's all brought into view. And then there's certain parts of the daughter. But in my opinion, you're seeing the shadow of her hair on his shoulder. It's just he is taller than she is.
Yeah.
The way the camera angle was taken, she's just kind of blocked out of the reflection. But don't you think you'd see a slight bit of her somewhere in the mirror? I said mirror like it was I'm from New York or New Jersey.
I picked that up too.
Mirror.
It all has to do with the angle. And I know, like, I looked at this picture for way longer than I needed to the other night, trying to figure out if it was Photoshopped or it was just the angle. I would go with it's just the angle. He's quite a bit taller than his daughter. And because he is that tall, in the reflection, you're only seeing his reflection. Hers is blocked. But it seems unnatural when you see the picture because everything else is right in front of you. And you go, well, that girl, the Pence daughter should also be in this picture. Why isn't she?
And I just don't get it, and I don't really care about it.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
But it's got like 1.6 billion hits everywhere because people are – now they're afraid. People are afraid that the Pence family is breeding vampires. We don't want that for our vice president.
And there are are some mean tweets. Again, just, you know, Mike Pence and his daughter didn't know Chili's turned you into a vampire. Somebody says she was photoshopped in because she secretly hates her dad and wouldn't talk to him.
I'm not sure that's accurate.
So much hatred here.
I don't think that's right.
But I did spend...
People blaming Obama for this? Thanks to Obama, we can't afford to have reflections in our mirror anymore.
Why don't you tweet that?
People would like it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know what the truth is, but I don't see that's something I don't really think is going to make any difference.
No, of course it doesn't.
But then when it was brought to my attention, I couldn't. You're right. I spent hours.
Right.
Like, okay.
You're going, okay, if the table was here and the guy who took the picture is here, wouldn't that angle show at least part of her? Were you doing that? You'd see a little bit of her, wouldn't you? But no, you don't see any of her.
And I have another question because this guy, I can't find the article where he actually went through and there were like 9 points that he wrote out and circled on the photo saying, okay, this couldn't be right. The straw wrapper hanging over the table is flat. That right. was edited in. And I'm like, oh, come on. But there's this one thing where they said, what is the lump in the reflection coming out of Mrs. Pence's head? But if you look carefully, it's not a lump. It is the family.
It's the family behind them. Yeah.
So my question is, you can see the kid that's behind him. How come his face is not blurred out?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I know it's... See, what are the rules on the internet? It's like the Wild West, Bill.
Yeah. I think if you're in a public place like that, you can take... It's a news story. You know, the fact that he and his...
But if that was your kid...
Right, you might... Right, I get it. You might be a little disturbed that this is making national news because you were just eating in Chili's.
Right.
You weren't looking for fame or fortune.
So, and, you know, like if I take a picture of somebody's, you know, bumper that is smashed or something, I'll blur the license plate
right.
because I don't think it's right. I would have blurred that kid's face.
Yeah, maybe.
But then they would have thought he photoshopped it.
Probably. All right, we need to take a break, and then we have more show for you. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Page 2.
I got to tell you, we are terrible listeners because there are 2 pages here. I didn't even look at the second one.
Yeah, well, you got to give all the facts, ma'am. Did Jack Webb teach us nothing? Guess what they're doing in Japan, Wendy, for the last time ever?
What? I was saying something, though. We're going to talk to Erin Katursky
at
2:15 this afternoon. You mentioned Melania and writing her thing.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel sorry for her. It was totally not her fault, and someone has fessed up. So we'll talk to Erin Katursky about that later on this afternoon. Now back to you, Bill. Already in progress.
Here's a mystery that I present to you.
Okay.
What are they doing in Japan right now for the last time? They have been doing this in Japan for years and years and years. But right now, they're doing it for the very last time. What is it?
Playing Pokemon Go?
No. Nope.
That was a good guess.
That was not a good guess.
Okay.
That was not a good guess.
Wouldn't be eating sushi because they do that a lot.
And they will continue
right.
to.
What are they doing for the last time?
This is the last time in Japan. And they have been doing this. I'm trying to see if they say exactly how long. I know it's been since the 80s, right? It's got to be.
Wearing parachute pants?
No. Do they do that in Japan? I don't think they do.
No.
I don't think
they're hipper than we are.
I'm going to say they've been doing this about 35 or 40 years, but no more after now.
I don't know.
Ready? Should I tell you?
No. All right. We'll take a commercial. We've got
and more show coming.
Yes, you should tell me.
Japan is about to make its last ever VCR. They will no longer make VCRs.
Really?
That's true. Here's the story, according to mentalfloss.com.
I love that website.
Most of us stopped using video cassette recorders a long time ago.
Maybe most.
I still have one up and running. I've not used it in a long time, but one of mine is still functional and ready if we need it. I don't know why would we, but if we do, we have it.
Can I just say that Dylan bought one at a Goodwill, a VCR, because if you go in our basement, we have probably 800 albums and probably about 150 to 300 VHSs.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, I'm going to buy a VCR at Goodwill for $5.
Right.
And he's been watching our movies.
It just occurred to me that when the girls were little, the format, the camera that I had to videotape them, it was a small cassette that you put in
an adapter.
An adapter, and that was the way you could see them.
Where are those tapes now? I'm just curious because we don't know where any of our baby tapes are.
I know
are.
Exactly where they are. And I, it's, you know, sadly, it's been a couple of years since we saw them, but we used to watch them quite regularly. And I have a feeling before my daughters go away to college, I'm gonna binge watch all of that.
With 10 boxes of Kleenex.
With 20 boxes of Kleenex.
Get them put on DVD because they, I mean.
That's a better move, isn't it?
That's what we have to do. Even our wedding video is VHS.
Yeah. But I'm afraid they'll hire a better actor to play me if we upgrade them. They'll get somebody with just a little more spirit.
They should, but they won't.
I wonder. I don't know if they will or not.
So that's the last VCR is going to be assembled in Japan.
They're about to make the very last one.
That's
it says
sad.
By 2008, it's hard to believe it's been 8 years, DVD had officially replaced VHS as the preferred home media format. And the glory days of the 1980s, when VHS and Betamax battled it out to be number one for watching and recording movies and television, were very much in the rearview mirror. So the big era of the VCR was the 80s, right? So it might surprise you to learn that VCRs are still being manufactured, at least they were until this month.
Wow.
A company called...
It's the end of an era.
It is the end of an era. It is the end of an era. Funai Electronic, the last remaining Japanese company to make the units, has announced that the company will cease production on its VCR units due to declining sales. And by declining, I mean non-existent. Who would go into a shop right now and buy
a new one?
You wouldn't, would you? Although, can I tell you the last time I saw them, I bought a TV, was it 3 or 4 months ago? I bought a big smart TV, and there were still a couple there, and they were $15 for a VCR, a brand
so,
new
yeah,
one.
So, yeah, I'd buy one then.
A brand new one for $15. They used to be a couple hundred.
Don't you have so many VHS tapes at your house?
I do have, you know.
Did you get rid of them?
I got rid of a lot of them.
We can't get rid of anything. I got all of the X-Files.
Do you on V? But you wouldn't watch it on there. You would if you wanted to see it. You'd get it either on Netflix or you'd buy the.
I know streaming is the way to go now, but I can't. I mean, I loved it when I recorded all those, and you had to set the timers.
But you know what? Here's what people don't realize about those: they flake tremendously.
Right.
Like even when they were top quality, when you used them initially. Over the years, like if you watch them now, you're going to notice all kinds of spots and flakes.
Quivering,
and stuff.
They're going to probably break in the machine.
Yeah.
So I wish they were still making them. I'd spend $15 for a new one while as all my VHS tapes break.
I know. The VCRs are made in China and sold in many territories, including North America. So China will still be making them under brand names like Sanyo. But last year's figures reported only 750,000 sales nationwide. That's 749,000 more than I was expecting.
I agree with you.
They still sold 750,000. Despite flagging sales of VCRs, collector sales of VHS tapes are booming. Are they? I'm shocked. With some rare editions fetching nearly $2,000 a pop. What VHS tape could get you $2,000?
Something unopened in pristine condition.
Really?
I don't know what.
Yeah? I can't imagine a tape of anything selling for more than $5 or $10. Mostly for the reason I just said, it's not going to last long. It just falls apart. The tape just doesn't hold the information.
Yeah, but DVDs stop working too if they get scratched.
Yeah, but isn't it a lot harder to do damage to a DVD? I think it is. Many collectors consider VHS to be the vinyl of analog video recording.
Yeah, but vinyl's coming back, so that's not an accurate statement.
Right, right. I would just love to know what VHS tape I would need to have.
The Godfather.
To get you. No, you know what? Years
just
and years ago.
Collect.
I don't know if you remember this. I hope you will, because Jimmy's so into Star Wars. It took a long time for the Star Wars trilogy, the original three, to go to VHS. Lucas wasn't sure he wanted to do it, and it took a long time. So it came out in a couple of different versions, and there was one particular version that was, it was all three of them in this gift box. Do you have it? All right. So when I was selling stuff off, when I was selling off tapes and stuff a couple of years ago, I thought, well, this cost me, I think it was $110 or $115. I could probably get half of that, right? And I put it on eBay, and the highest bid I got for it was $14.
And that was a couple of years ago.
But see, that's different, too, because Star Wars fans already had that. I'll bet you everyone really a Star Wars fan has found that somewhere along the line. And they're such rabid, loyal fans, those Star Wars fans, that I'm sure they got it when it first became available.
Yeah, that would make sense, I guess.
But now that's something that's like on a shelf in the Star Wars room.
Just the box or the tapes?
In there. There's everything. Cereal boxes with...
Yeah.
It's all Star Wars all the time.
Yeah.
I don't go in that room anymore. But I mean, like, you know, I don't know. If you love The Godfather so much, that's your favorite movie. It would be like a nice little trophy to put on a display shelf or something.
I wouldn't do it with the...
It's retro.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But it's in a weird kind of way, because this was such cutting-edge technology. Like, when people got their first VCRs, it was like, well, here comes the future. Here it is.
I know. And, Joel, how much did you pay for your first VCR?
Well, we paid $1,000 in order to tape Luke and Laura's wedding.
Oh, wow. In General Hospital?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were both working, and we had to see it. So we spent $1,000. I think we're still paying it off.
Thank you so much, Joel.
There's an episode of the Bob Newhart show where one of Bob Hartley's patients, to thank him, gives him a VCR, and they wheel it in. It's this
giant.
It's this huge giant.
I remember that.
The first ones were so big. You couldn't believe it.
Yeah, but that was, and my sister insisted on getting a Betamax because the sound was supposedly better. But like, really, it mattered? We didn't have stereo sound on our TV, probably.
I know.
But it was the first time we ever had a remote, and it was like there was a cord on it.
Right.
But that was the best thing, because until then, I had been the remote. Go change the channel, will
you? There's progress. All right, a quick break, and then some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, you just heard it in the news. Right now, in Chicago, it's in the 80s. It's going to be in the 90s tomorrow and Friday. And Saturday, they said, if you go outside, you will burst into flames.
They did not, but they did warn us that usually we get some relief at night where the temperature goes down. It will go down a little, but not enough to cool your house off if you don't have air conditioning.
Right. Well, the reason we bring this up is the people over at DNA Info have compiled a bunch of things that if you're in a situation where air conditioning is not there for you, these are little helpful hints that can make your world just a little bit cooler. Not dramatically cooler, but at least more tolerable. I have to say, Wendy, I went through these, and even though I'm not an expert on this sort of thing, I already knew these. But I will share them with you in case people are startled to find these out. But I kind of already knew these. For instance, they suggest that you open your windows at night. That's kind of common knowledge, isn't it? Little bit of air go through your house. Circulate a little air through your house.
Yeah.
It says flood your house with cooler air at night by opening multiple windows on multiple floors. We keep getting wrens in our house. Do you think that's connected to this?
Oh.
If your home has more than one story, if it doesn't have more than one story, the multiple thing is not for you. Open on opposite sides of a room or on opposite ends of a building for maximum circulation. Open multiple side-by-side windows. In other words, open all your windows.
Yeah, but you need fans, because if you just open the windows, it's not going to do anything.
Fans would certainly help the situation. Yeah, no doubt about that. But then it says, close them during the day. Which, again, is solid advice, because it's very, very hot outside. You don't want that air in your house.
And close your blinds. That is for sure.
Right.
Or curtains. Seriously, because that sun beating in.
That's true.
Remember, like, when the sun was it has moved now, because as the summer moves on, the sun moves in the sky.
Yes.
It used to get, like, scorching hot in here when the sun's beating on these windows, and it's air conditioned. So,
I know.
You know, if you don't have window treatments.
Right.
Call Meredith Hartley. I think she sells them.
Mariette Hartley.
Oh, yeah.
She's not James Garner's wife, you know.
Oh, no.
They're not married.
But put sheets or something, just honestly, to cover that sun coming in.
Hey, did you guys know you're supposed to run your ceiling fans counterclockwise in the summer?
Why would that be?
Well, there's science behind it. In the winter, you're supposed to do it clockwise. Yeah. Summer, counterclockwise. because it circulates the air differently.
Right. In the winter, heat rises, so you want to push the hot air from your ceiling down to the floor to kind of warm you up. And the opposite for the summer, where since heat rises, you want to...
Doesn't heat always rise?
Right. But yeah. You want to change the direction of the blade so it sucks the cool air up and cools the room. But I will have to admit, and Veronica, I hope you're honest about this, I never change the little button.
I have never looked, not once.
I don't think there is.
Do they all come with that button? I don't know.
Yes.
That mine do. Yeah, they do.
You
all
can
right.
change the direction of the fan blades.
I had no idea that was even an option.
I knew it. I have never done it, ever.
Is that an easy move? I don't think it would
There's
be,
a
would it?
Toggle
it's just
switch.
A button. That's all it is a button?
Well, you go to, you know, turn the fan off first.
Yeah.
Before you stand on the bed to get
You know, I've hit myself in the head twice. You know
I have
that,
a
right?
friend who had a terrible concussion because of that. She was doing something and just misjudged it.
I know.
And got whacked in the head and was
it's
hospitalized
awful.
With a pretty bad concussion from it.
It's awful.
But yeah, there's just a little toggle switch that if you move it the other way, it'll change the direction.
Goes the other way. Oh, I didn't know that. All right.
Ask Lou Manfredini to come and do it.
He won't take my calls. He will not take my calls.
Anymore.
So, no, anymore. He refuses to. So as you pointed out, closing your blinds is a good idea, unless you're Alfred Hitchcock making a movie, because then you ruin the movie. So many Hitchcock movies will be ruined by your theory. Yeah, it says it right here. Keep your blinds down. Keep your curtains closed. It turns out your grandparents and your great-grandparents were onto something. Did my great-grandparents close their blinds? I don't know what that means.
Bow, 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 bow. The more,
we don't want Herbert Hoover to see us. Close our blinds. The more you can shade your home and keep out the sun rays, the better. It says turn your fans off when you leave the room. No, I don't do that. I keep my fans going.
Why are you supposed to turn them off?
It says the breeze is there to cool your skin by evaporating sweat. It's not there to cool off the room.
Yeah, it is.
I think it is, isn't it? I keep the fan going. I think that's better to keep the air moving all the time. I think.
We never turn them off.
I mean, we do sometimes. We don't keep them going 24 hours
vacation.
A day.
We
but,
do.
Right. Do you always keep them going?
In the summer, the ceiling fans are pretty much on all the time.
It says, now here's another one that I know we're violating. If you have to use your air conditioner, now that goes against the grain of what the story is, because it says these are tips for people who don't have air conditioning. But now it says if you do have air conditioning and you have to use it, run it in bursts. Air conditioning units are at their best when running at full speed for only short periods. When it gets to be
constantly.
As hot, yeah, when it gets up into the 90s, it's on almost all day.
I do know, and I've been told that, you know, you have a thermostat and say your house is at 70 and you want to cool it off, go down a couple of degrees at a time, because for some reason, someone told me if you go like down to, you know, 62, you go down 8 degrees, it's
right.
not going to work.
It's not like your car where you put it at the coldest setting it could go and on full speed.
Right.
The house is too big.
Yeah. We're right? dumb.
I said at the beginning of this, I already knew most of these, but I've broken most of these.
Well, we can continue these throughout the rest of the show, but we're going to take a quick break, and then we go live to Aaron Katursky, who is in Cleveland. We're going to find out what's on tap for day 3 of the Republican National Convention. We're also going to talk about Melania's speech, I guess it was.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. All right, Bill. We go live to Cleveland right now. ABC News correspondent Aaron Katursky is with us. Aaron, this is day 3 of all the festivities. What are we looking forward to?
Mike Pence. This is his night to claim the vice presidential nomination, and he was right there on the lakefront just a short while ago when Donald Trump landed in a fashion that was completely Donald Trump, lacking no measure of subtlety. In a helicopter emblazoned with his name, circling the arena where he will accept the nomination himself tomorrow night, and then landing on the lakefront, greeted by Mike Pence and his kids. He says, "We're going to win Ohio. We're going to win the whole thing."
We were debating earlier, Aaron, whether or not Mike Pence was truly Donald Trump's first choice. What are your thoughts?
Look, you'll never really know because it's a rather insular campaign, and we're told that his kids are his closest advisors. He certainly does have some others who are advising him, but it did seem to come down to Newt Gingrich and also to Chris Christie, maybe Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. Who knows how serious any of these others were. But in Mike Pence, he gets somebody who isn't anything like him. A mild-mannered Midwesterner with government experience, a political track record, conservative credentials, popular with evangelicals, and he really is, it's hoped, going to solidify Trump's hold on more of the Republican base. And tonight, he has a tall order. He has to introduce himself to the majority of Americans that know almost nothing about him.
Now, Donald Jr. did a great job last night. Everybody's praising him for a job well done. A little bit hateful, in my opinion, especially when people started chanting, lock her up, throughout the evening. And then we go back to Melania, who did her speech, and we found out we had heard it before from Michelle Obama. Now, some new developments. The person who helped to write Melania's speech is no longer with the campaign?
Still with the campaign. Meredith McIver said she tried to resign, but Trump wouldn't let her. And officially, she's not even with the campaign. She's a Trump staff writer at the Trump organization, at the business, and apparently has been talking to Melania Trump about the speech. Melania Trump read her some lines from Michelle Obama's 2008 speech that Mrs. Trump apparently liked. Meredith McIver said in a statement that she included them without checking. And so she took the blame and said that the speech and the mistake were hers, and that she tried to resign over it, but Donald Trump wouldn't let her. And lo and behold, she said she was grateful for his forgiveness.
Did she go to Trump University? Is that where she took the speech writing class?
Look, it is an interesting development in that the statement today elongates a scandal that just this morning the Trump campaign had said it was ready to move on from. It also, in her explanation, contradicts 2 days of what the Trump campaign has said. And so, you know, who knows what went on. But the campaign will try to pivot tonight away from all of that and start to focus on the general election as Mike Pence formally accepts the vice presidential nomination.
We're talking with Aaron Katursky of ABC News. Aaron, explain this to us, because this is another thing Wendy and I covered earlier, but you're there, so you tell me. You got Ted Cruz speaking at this thing. Ted Cruz is the same guy that Donald Trump refers to as Lying Ted. So what's in it for Ted Cruz to go up there under strange circumstances for a guy that he doesn't really get along with? What's in it for him?
2020, maybe.
Yeah?
Look, it's not just Lying Ted. It's also Little Marco, who's going to be coming to this convention, we think, via video and addressing delegates. Maybe not ready to fully endorse Donald Trump, but neither did a lot of the speakers. Listen to Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan last night mentioning Donald Trump as the Republican Party's best chance at enacting its agenda. He might as well have said, you know, it's the best chance for me keeping my job as Speaker of the House. I think there's Republicans who certainly join the disdain for Hillary Clinton, but who are also, you know, looking ahead beyond Donald Trump, and whether the party is going to be defined in his image, as Trump seems to be trying to do here, there's still plenty of resistance to that.
Do you feel like Mike Pence is going to solidify the deal for Donald Trump?
I think the Trump campaign certainly hopes so, because he does represent what Donald Trump doesn't. And yet, Trump's base of support came from people who aren't like Mike Pence, came from outsiders, came from people without an interest in government experience, came without people who were even all that interested, it seems, in conservative principles. They just liked what Trump had to say. And we haven't heard a lot of the issues that got Trump here. Haven't heard anything about banning Muslims, building walls at Mexico's expense, nothing about scrapping trade deals. And yet those are the very issues that that gave Donald Trump the nomination. Trump's campaign says the candidate himself may bring those up here on Thursday night.
So, Aaron, who decides that? Who orchestrates, as you just mentioned,
those are some pretty big issues. But who decides that at this convention they're not going to play those up? Is that a conscious decision, or does that just happen by accident?
It's everything that happens is a conscious decision. And when we asked the Trump campaign, we were told that they wanted to highlight different things. So they said that Trump did a good job of explaining what he's about to voters during the primaries. But here, as they make a turn to the general election, they felt it important to define him more personally. And that's why the Trump family is playing such a big role here. And son Eric is going to be the next of the siblings to testify on behalf of their father. But one of the things that has happened here is that when the kids aren't speaking, or Melania's not speaking, there's nothing about Donald Trump. It's all about Hillary Clinton, because she has been the one unifying factor of this convention.
All right, and when will Baron Trump, Baron von Trump, be speaking?
I'm not sure we're going to hear from
him
this week.
As Bill mentioned earlier, he's the one that we should be hearing from.
I trust him the most.
All right, and Mike Pence came out against the banning of Muslims. Isn't that kind of a contradiction, as everything is this election?
You know, when they were together on 60 Minutes, and, you know, Trump wouldn't let Pence get a word in edgewise, you know, Trump said, you know, sometimes they have a difference of opinion, and, you know, that's it. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of debate. We know where Pence stands. Trump knew where he stood, and yet chose him, you know, for reasons that weren't yet fully explained. We you know, Trump said that he's become a friend, and that he's been a great governor. You know, there's been all sorts of rumors about, you know, maybe Newt Gingrich, maybe Chris Christie, maybe they were too similar. But it's Mike Pence's moment now to not only try and pitch for Trump, but also to define himself and where he stands, and give the delegates a sense of what he's about.
Aaron, in the days you've been there in Cleveland for the convention, what's the strangest or most interesting thing you've seen?
It's been a long, strange week already, and
yeah,
we're only halfway through, really. It's a bunch of colorful characters, as it always is at these conventions, you know, with matching red jackets, you know, bedazzled with rhinestones in the crowd. But I think what's striking is the amount of delegates really sitting on their hands, still not yet satisfied with Donald Trump, the nominee, and yet entirely unified behind their disdain for Hillary Clinton. You mentioned, I think, Chris Christie's mock trial of Clinton last night, and the chant, "Lock her up."
Yeah.
I mean, it went over well in the arena. I wonder what people watching at home thought of those fist-waving, angry people in the hall.
Yeah.
And what that moment may mean.
It's just, in my opinion, seems to be all hate-based. And we were talking earlier about John McCain, how, you know, when someone criticized Barack Obama, he kind of said, hey, that's not where we're going here. And yet hating Hillary is the thing that's unifying everyone.
It's true. And Hillary Clinton's going to have her own chance to define Donald Trump the way she wants. But certainly here. And we asked the Trump campaign about this, you know, about the chance "lock her up" and whether that was something the campaign wanted to see. And we were told, well, that's how people here feel. And you know, there's a real question in these delegates' minds about Hillary Clinton, about her stewardship of her time at the State Department, and that they're not going to let it go.
And lastly, I heard something about some groups. I think it was the Westboro Baptist Church, the KKK. There was one other group involved, and they were throwing urine at one another. Any update on that? And has there been any danger, or have you been afraid or seen anything that you should be worried about?
No, nothing like that at all. There's been a skirmish or two, and you know, a little bit of rough and tumble, but nothing, I think, like what was expected, at least not yet. And that's certainly good news. Police prepared for everything and for the worst, but so far they haven't had to take extreme measures.
Aaron, thank you so much. Great job. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That's Aaron Katursky of ABC News. We'll take a quick break. We'll get the local news and national news from right here at WGN.
All right, let me start this next little segment. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I want to say that you are much more adventurous than I am.
Oh, well, thank you. That's true, but thank you. Appreciate that.
There's a cool thing that is coming to Carpentersville. We all did this when we were kids, but I'm old now, so I don't know if I'm going to partake in the festivities. But did you like to slip and slide when you
were
younger?
Very much so. Love the slip and slide.
When's the last time you've done it?
It's been a while.
How many years?
Well over a decade. It's been well over a decade. When the girls were little, we had one in the yard, and I used it then, but I've not used it in over a decade.
Any interest in a 300-foot slip and slide?
If only it existed, yes.
Well, guess who's in the studio? It's Spencer Hun. Hi, Spencer.
Hey, how are you doing?
Nice to see you, Spencer.
300 feet?
1,000 feet, actually.
What?
Yeah, the steepest, most exciting, fastest slide this Saturday in Carpentersville, Illinois, on Maple Avenue at slidethecity.com. It's an experience that you have never dreamt of.
All right, explain this to me. Walk us through it, because I'm a big baby.
So in Slide the City, my best friend from college came to me and said, I want to start an event company that doesn't have to do with running or training, just fun.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going to roll out 1,000 feet of slip and slide, and people will get on tubes and sled the summertime. And I said, that sounds fun, but like, are people really going to want to do it? And then I went to the prototype launch, grabbed a tube. I was really the first person to do it. And when I got to the bottom of the slide, I was like, I'm in on this business. So let's be partners. Let's take it to every state, to every country. And it's the best way you could spend $20 to $40 on a Saturday, no questions asked.
Spencer, this has been going on to some extent on a much smaller level on college campuses for quite a while. I see stories every summer or every other summer where they'll find some sort of a hill and they'll set up a very small version of this, right?
Yeah, I've done it once in college. They got some really cool roofing tarps out, standard protocol, the black tarps. But see, we roll out wrestling mats that are literally indestructible. My own 70-year-old father fell on his back. I thought I was going to take him to the hospital. He bounced up laughing like a child.
Really?
Really?
We have blowers we set up. So there's an air bumper on all of the lanes and then a 70-foot splash pad to stop you that, you know, the water of that collects and then drains out into the storm drain, and very little water is actually used. It's so much fun. It's like having a treehouse and then having an architect come and build the best you could ever want to as a kid. Yeah. So every kid and every adult transforms into a child with their best ever slip and slide imagination. And it's like Disneyland right in your backyard. It's better than any ride you could pay for at Six Flags, Disneyland, whatever. It's so much fun.
So when somebody is on board with this, they want to do this, and we'll give you all the information in just a little bit. Slidethecity.com is your website. Do you buy, is it a one-time down the hill
thing? No, you're going to go for the day.
Yeah.
And we have riders from ages 5 all the way up until 70,
oh,
80.
Wow.
I mean, I've had people that are probably over 80 sliding. It's unbelievable how much
on
fun
on purpose.
On purpose,
people over 80. Okay, good.
I'm looking at this. I might even do it.
You got to
come
do
this.
Yeah, because the inner tube is the deal maker for me.
It is.
If
really
I'm
is.
Just sitting, you know, on my butt,
right.
I'm going to be flipping head over heels because you go pretty fast, don't you?
You do, but the inner tube makes it completely fun, controllable.
Yep.
And then in downtown Chicago the following week, we're going to break that slide up into 300-foot slides.
Okay, that's where I got
that. Because there's not the terrain to warrant a 1,000-foot shot.
Yeah.
But it'll still be a blast. But anyone who's like a real thrill seeker should come to Carpentersville on Saturday.
That's the big one.
And then I think all the kids are going to have a blast running up and down that hill. They sled all winter there. I live here part-time.
Yeah.
I see them sledding in the winter. Well, then, of course, in the summer, they're going to have a lot more fun sledding that hill.
And think about it. When you had a slip and slide in your yard, I mean, maybe there was a tiny little bump or divot in your yard where you'd go up and
down.
But
even that little bump felt so good.
It was fun.
But this is going downhill.
This is going 300 feet down all sides of Cricket Hill on Montrose Beach. And there's little divots and it's fun. And then, you know, the kids will be out there wading in the pool.
Right.
It is going to be a blast. People will drive by and really, really spectacle.
Approximately how fast would somebody go?
I think people have hit 40 miles an hour.
Have they gone that fast? Really?
I have been walking up the street before, terrified for the group going down.
Yeah.
Carpentersville has that potential. It's as steep as any hill we've done.
Yeah.
And then downtown Chicago is going to be a much more gentle, laid-back ride, but still a lot of fun.
Oh, I would think. Yeah.
All right. It's slidethecity.com is the website to go to, and you can see it live as it's happening. It's a pretty great view to give you an idea of what's going on. Do you typically go, you have to go on your stomach?
You want to go on your stomach. In Carpentersville, you could probably go any way you want, but on your stomach, you're going to get the most slide for your athletic ability.
That's the thing about Carpentersville, Wendy. There's no rules.
There's
they
no
just
rules.
Live.
What happens in Carpentersville?
It stays there. They don't have any rules in Carpentersville.
It's dangerous in Carpentersville. It's going to be so fun in Carpentersville.
All right, and that's going on this Saturday beginning at 10 a.m., correct?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back with Spencer Hunt. Spencer Kono, co-owner of Slide the City, and Slide the City is coming to Chicago at Cricket Hill on July 30th, Carpentersville this weekend. You can go to slidethecity.com. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Spencer Hahn is a genius. I'm not going to pull any punches. The man is a genius. He took the concept of the slip and slide and turned it into Slide the City. Go to slidethecity.com. It's coming to Carpentersville, and it's coming to Chicago. Will you do a water weenie ride at some point, too? That'd be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yep. Think about that.
How do you... You don't ride a water weenie.
I learned the hard way. I don't want to talk about it on air, Wendy.
All right. We all grew up with a slip and slide. This is just a little bit longer and better than the ones we've gone on. Happening in Carpentersville this Saturday only, July 23rd. Location is Maple Avenue between Rosewood and Tamarack Drive.
Yep.
All right, and slidethecity.com is where you can find the info. And then the following Saturday, July 30th, Cricket Hill on Montrose Beach. Now, you said your goal was to go through all the states. How many states have you put this Slide the City up in?
Yeah, I would estimate about 35 states our company has.
In a year and a half.
In a year and a half.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we have a bunch of partners, and we divide and conquer. And I've been responsible for the southern states, southeast, and then also Illinois and New York. And
so in some states, you can only do them during the summer months, the warm weather months. But then you have other states, you can do them year round if you want.
In Florida, we have done it in February.
Have you? Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense.
It was fun.
In New York, do they get to have a cigar while they're going down this?
I hope so.
Slide. What about age related things? How old do you have?
Five and up is good because we don't want to. It can get a little bit crazy on the slide. We don't want any infants getting hurt.
Right.
And. The downtown Chicago one will be a lot more gentle than the Carpentersville one, although they're all going to be more safe than soccer or football, but it is athletic. It is something that, you're coming to have an active time. In Carpentersville, someone like myself would want to know about Carpentersville. I'd rather drive the extra time to go and have a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Do you have headphones over there to throw on? Because we have a listener who has a question for you.
Oh, nice.
Or a comment, maybe. Your first call. All right. Ed, this is Spencer Hunn. And I don't know if it's a question or you want some bragging rights. Ed?
Yeah. Oh, hey. Yeah, this is Ed. I'm not saying bragging rights, but back in the day, this is the number of years ago, when I was a student down at Purdue University, in the men's dorm, we had water fountains in the hallway. We'd plug up the water fountains, and we would flood the tile floors. And so that was like right in the middle. So we'd get to the end of the hallway where it was dry and run, and we had our own indoor slip and slide.
And how many broken elbows or kneecaps did you have hitting into the walls?
Oh, we didn't keep track of that. There could have been that, yes, and there was, but we didn't lose anybody. We didn't lose anybody. When you guys are talking about this 1,000-foot-long slip and slide, I'm like, oh my God, that's got to be the best thing that anybody has ever thought of.
Well, we're right in the middle of a heat wave, so either head out to Carpentersville this Saturday or Cricket Hill and Montrose Beach next Saturday. And there are bumpers on this one, so you won't hurt your elbow or your kneecap.
I'm not hitting my head on the concrete block walls and such. So, hey, okay, thank you very much. I love your show. And
thank you, Ed.
Stay cool out there, guys.
Spencer, you got to consider the indoor version of this, where really it seems foolproof to me.
I have
can't
been
imagine.
Considering it. I think we did something similar in the nasty locker rooms of our baseball.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
I was trying not to remember those shower slides.
Yeah. Now, do you pack up all the same equipment and bring it from state to state, or wherever you go, do you find new equipment to set this up?
I am an official carny. Yes.
Yeah.
I've become a carny this
same
summer.
Same equipment.
We shipped it last summer. This summer, I've been driving it with my family.
With the trailer?
With the trailers and the trucks. It's pretty fun.
Do you sleep in parking lots? And maybe if you get there early?
I have one time.
It sound very glamorous.
You know, my family and I ran a real successful business for 15 years, and so we're just trying to be... trying to try the carny life and see if we could hack it that before we head back to our posh living arrangements.
Yeah.
Now, you said you live here part-time. Where's the other part of the time?
Alpine, Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah is where we have our home. My mom told me today she's homesick for the comfortable house.
And that's ski territory there, right?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, so you're used to seeing what you're employing here. You're used to seeing people come down hills.
People actually were using our tubes to sled last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're amazing tubes. People love them.
Explain this to me. I saw people in there's a video. If you go to slidethecity.com, you get a better idea of what we're all discussing.
Oh, so great.
So some people are using just kind of standard tubes and mats, but then other people, I saw one kid going down on like a plastic porpoise or something.
On a dolphin, yeah.
On a dolphin, yeah.
You can find those at your local Walmart, but we would recommend our tubes because they're the most fun and the safest.
Yeah.
And all fastest. Right.
That makes sense.
I really am a big baby, but I'm watching this and
you better go. This is bucket list stuff. This really is.
Do it, Wendy.
You can only slide the city once in a lifetime, you know?
Right.
Oh, if you get a big turnout, you're going to come back next summer, I have a feeling.
Nothing's guaranteed, but yes, we'd like to. We'd like to, but you don't want to miss it. It's so much fun.
It's fast.
Look at you. I can see you going.
It's really looking fun, though.
It seems scary, but scary can be good.
Scary's great.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with scary.
It's hard to get hurt when you have bumpers on the side. You're on an inner tube. And
would you let Wendy wear a helmet if that was the deal breaker?
We provide wrestling and boxing helmets.
Do you have helmets there?
Yeah, we do.
Do you? Yeah.
I have a video of me using the helmet and everyone making fun of me for it. So.
See, yeah, that's why I'm not doing it.
Wear a racing helmet. That would look great with a number on it.
Yeah,
something. That would look fantastic.
Yeah, bring a helmet. We should actually suggest that to people.
But you can't, like if somebody said, I'm not sure if this is a good idea, you don't mind if I wear a helmet, that's fine.
Yeah, bring a helmet.
Yeah, all right.
Can I borrow yours?
Yeah, you can wear my football helmet. That would look great.
That would be fun.
People would think you were Garo Yeprimian.
All right, anything we need to know? No nudity. You got to wear your bathing suit or shorts or T-shirt.
Clothes,
what do you want?
We had a guy last year in a 3-piece suit, an 85-year-old gentleman.
Now, what was that on purpose?
Yeah, he was making a statement. We didn't know who he was. He just came 3-piece suit, got on his tube, and I literally went down behind him to make sure that he was going to end up in 1-piece.
He knew he was going to get wet. That's obvious.
He came dressed to impress.
All right.
And he certainly did. So just wear anything that's comfortable. And what is the cost of this?
It fluctuates between $20 and $40, depending on the amount of slides you want. But I'll tell you, this will be the one thing people talk about for next year, for the whole year, and kick themselves they didn't get their friends out.
Yeah, I bet.
It's just one of those things that you just want to make the effort to get out, and it'll be magical.
How long are the lines? Do you move through pretty quickly?
Yeah, not bad. The longest 15 minutes if you're at the peak time, maybe 20 if it's peak time. But usually there's no line.
But you have to wait for one person to get all the way down to the bottom.
No,
you don't have to wait
back to back.
Do you? Okay.
It's fun.
More fun that way.
Yeah, we like to go on a train too. Nothing like a good train.
Is that true? So more than one person?
We
can
like to
go
do
down
the locomotion.
Wow. It's like a slip and slide conga line.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Different.
That's what it
absolutely
is.
Ankles and feet holding on. It's a ton of fun.
I'm wearing a helmet.
And
I just
how
decided.
Long from top to bottom? How long does it take you to do that?
Imagine sprinting 3 football fields. That's the distance. That's the time.
At about 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it could be 15 miles an hour. I'm saying the steepest hill we ever did, I thought some people got up that fast.
Really?
We won't do that hill again next year.
Where was that?
It was in Birmingham, but no injury, so we're excited.
Oh, good. All right.
Yeah, they're still operating, so they're keeping track of the injuries, and it looks like there aren't many.
That's good.
What are the hours on Saturday?
Come at 10 and then until it dies down, usually around 5 or 6. It's going to be awesome.
All right.
All right. It's Spencer Hun. He is co-owner of Slide the City. If you have any doubts, please go to slidethecity.com and watch this, because every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, my God, it looks
doesn't
so fun.
Doesn't it look great?
And it's going to be so hot this Saturday. That's out in Carpentersville, Maple Avenue between Rosewood and
Tamarack.
Tamarack is a weird word.
It is.
Tamarack Drive. That's this Saturday, July 23rd from 10 to 5-ish. And then next Saturday, July 30th, Cricket Hill on Montrose Beach. Go to slidethecity.com. Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thank you guys so much.
We'll find out what's going on at the convention next with Rowan Anna. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.